I'm here, yes.
Okay, there we go. Hi, Liz. Right.
Wow.
Can we have your report, please? And there's Maya, the commissioner.
Yes. So just a few things today. First, probably on everybody's mind, just addressing the COVID case we had. It was managed really well. The staff communicated really early on what was going on. We tried to be really transparent with our communications with the families and the public. I think it was handled really well. You know, we closed out of an abundance of caution. There were a fair amount of people exposed potentially, and we just didn't want to risk it. It didn't feel worth it to stay open and risk all of that with how many people had been exposed. So it was a great learning opportunity for us. You know, we just moved from being separated at Oakdale with the younger kids to having all of our kids at the youth center. So we're gonna put some new policies in place. We're not gonna allow the older kids to come in until the younger kids are completely gone and we've disinfected. We're also not gonna have staff work double shifts. So the reason so many people were exposed is because that staff happened to work at double that day. And so both age groups were potentially exposed. So that's not gonna happen anymore. And it's just been really helpful to help us, you know, hone in what we're doing and how we can do it safely and keep everybody safe while keeping programming going. So, other things going on, we just had our last day of youth soccer this past Saturday. It was a huge success. We had a lot of people come. We just did skills and drills. It was really cute. So the last day, it was, I don't know if anybody was up early on Saturday morning, but it was cold and it was super foggy and everything was covered in frost. And, you know, the kids just kind of showed up out of the mist. And we're excited to be there for the last day, and it was really cute to watch. That was thanks to Friends of Hudson Youth and the sponsorship from Greylock Federal Credit Union. We were able to run that with really minimal cost. It was just a couple staff that would help out every now and then. And we were able to have our last day because our coaches are outside of the program, and we did have some staff, myself included, that didn't need to quarantine because there wasn't exposure. So I was really grateful that we got to finish that out because it was really great and really fun, and the kids and families really enjoyed it. This is where I would show you all the adorable pictures that I have, but I'm not good at that when we're not in person, not a technology person, so I'm going to post them on our Facebook page and maybe our Instagram and get those photos out there so you guys can check it out. It was really adorable. A couple weekends ago, we did our Oakdale cleanup, and that was a really good success, too. Friends of Oakdale Lake really helped make that happen. We had a lot of volunteers show up outside of the two organizations as well. If you walk the trail, the parks over by the playground where you go down towards the one fishing area, there's a lot of invasive species that was removed from there. It was a big, big step into an even bigger project that's going to be ongoing. So that was really cool. We planted a lot of bulbs. We're hopeful in the spring. You know, after the cold, dark winter, they'll have a lot of flowers come out from the park, make it really inviting. And refreshing. And we also, you'll notice that one of the hills just kind of looks like dirt because that is the wildflower area that we had talked about, that I've been talking about for the last few meetings. So we finally got it prepped. We're getting it seeded. We're going to seed it now so some of the seeds can overwinter. I don't remember the term, but some of them need to be in the ground to, you know, become plants and flowers. And then we'll reseed it again in the spring to make sure that it does grow up. So be patient with it. It doesn't look pretty right now, but you know, that's what transition is and growth and change. So hopefully in the spring that comes up and it's nice and beautiful. And then a couple of things we're looking forward to. We're trying to figure out how we do youth basketball. Probably gonna try and do another skills and drills. It's just easier to keep it smaller. Fewer coaches involved if we're just doing skills and drills. But I'm working closely with Tyrone to figure that out and to see what we're going to offer and when we're going to offer it. Probably won't be until into January that we start that, just to get through the holiday seasons and have some time and space to figure out how we do that safely. And then the other thing we're looking at is the parent advisory committee. Tiffany was nice enough to give me a call after the last meeting, and we talked about the importance of meeting the families and how we're trying to get that done at the department. It is difficult with, you know, all that's going on. And so there's a committee that was previously in place that kind of took a hiatus during the pandemic and everything. So we're trying to bring that back. and Tyrone again is helping me with that, and hopefully we have that set up soon. All the programming I talked about last time is still going on. We've got someone coming in from the Shaker Museum that is leaving. We've got the art school in Ghent coming in to do a program. Still Rebecca with Sound Lab and web design, cooking, art class, all sorts of stuff when we get back. So we're just hopeful that everybody takes time to get healthy, stay safe, and we're looking forward to getting back at it next Monday, unless something changes. And that is what I have for you today.
Thank you. Maya, anything to add?
Nothing at all. Thank you, Liz.
Can anybody on the council have questions for Liz? Oh, please mute yourself.
I got a question, Tom.
Okay, go right ahead.
So, Liz, there's not going to be any turkey trot. Usually, each department does turkey trot. Imagine, due to everything going on, there's not going to be turkey trot, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and then how many, including full-time and part-time staff, how many do you currently have?
I've got, sorry, I don't know the exact number. I've got 4 full-time staff, and 5 full-time staff and maybe 7 part-time currently.
Okay, and how many are vaccinated?
The majority of our staff are vaccinated.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Any other questions from council members? Any questions from the public? Please.
I have a question, Tom.
Okay.
This is off of Dominic's question, so I'm curious to know, are we mandating that everyone in all departments are vaccinated? Is that what the city is doing?
That's not a question for me, right? If it's a city.
No, it's not. It's for Tom.
Oh,
you would be getting the outcome of it, whatever the answer would be.
Not a question for me either.
You know. Okay, so let me ask you, Liz. Did you receive any notice saying that everyone in your department has to be mandated?
We're in talks about it to see.
No, I'm not asking if you all are talking about it within you and the commissioner. I'm asking if have you received any letter from the city, meaning the mayor's office, the common council?
I don't do
that. Or even maybe a supervisor. Have you received any notice saying that people in the department of the youth department has to be mandated?
The mayor and I are talking about it. There hasn't been an official letter, no.
So you have not received a letter mandating for anybody in your department to be vaccinated? Because I just want two things to be, and we don't have to go on this subject matter, but I just want you all to respect two things. One, that's a private issue between that individual and their doctor. And two, you know, if it's not mandated, then we'll leave it at that until the federal government decides that it should be.
Okay. Thank you. Bill has a question.
Yeah, hi. Bill Houston here. Hi, Liz.
Oh,
hi, Bill.
Hey there. I'm going to bring up the issue of the missing sign or the lack of a sign at the entrance to Oakdale. And I think it's kind of crazy to me that I'm trying to get information about a sign at Oakdale from somebody from the youth department. But is anything going on? Is it going to happen anytime? And who's designing the sign?
Friends of Hudson Youth and Friends of Oakdale Lake have been working to get signs designed and ordered. I think that they have been ordered, but I think just like everything else, it's just back ordered and delayed. I know that the process is pretty far along. I believe everything was ordered. I just don't know when it's going to come in.
So it's going to be a sign on the front kiosk? I'm assuming there's just going to be one sign that says, you know, welcome to Oakdale, something along those lines.
I don't remember the designs. It was a while ago that they were shown to me. I don't know where, we haven't decided yet exactly where it's going to be placed, but you know, as we get more information, I can definitely keep you in the loop.
Okay.
I'm still unclear because, so nobody from your department or from
Bill,
the city?
Bill, your question has been answered.
I want to know who's designing the sign and if the public can have inputs.
The sign was already designed, so the time for input is over at this point. So
who designed it? Did Friends of Oakdale design it?
Friends of Oakdale Lake and Friends of Hudson Youth had an artist design it, and they worked with them.
Somebody outside of city, your department in City Hall did it, you're saying?
I don't know.
If that's the case, I'm not getting angry with you. You're the newcomer. I'm very disappointed that there's been no public input for a decent sign, or to make sure there's a decent sign, at our largest natural park.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Margaret Morris has her hand up.
Yes, thanks, Tom. So, Liz, we haven't met yet. I have met with Peter Frank and trying to get some information about the Hudson Youth and Friends of Hudson Youth. One of the things that we talked about was athletics, because something that strikes me is that, you know, one of the questions I had was, to what extent can the school district coordinate with your group and with your department to really provide resources and so forth? And the one thing that came up was that athletics, you know, track and field and so forth, falls under the school department's, the school district's jurisdiction. So when you were talking about skills and drills for basketball and for soccer, what are you doing to coordinate with the school district? Is there anything going on there where you can use, you know, kind of synchronize and use the school district resources? Can you just talk a little about how you're coordinating with the school district on athletic activities, which are very important?
Yeah, I mean, right now we kind of fill the gap of the youth program. So we're working with kids that are 5 to 12-ish, because the modified programs are where it picks up at the schools. So we're filling that younger need for the base of the program to get them involved in sports initially, so that as they get older and the school programs are offered, that they're more inclined. Know more about it at this point.
So most of the things I'm talking about really happen in middle and high school. So what you're doing is dealing with the younger kids to bring them into that, so that at middle and high school then they can engage. Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, Tiffany. Oops. Tiffany, we have a question.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to correct me if I'm wrong, Liz, but I wanted to address this to Miss Margaret, because it of course, having all types of athletic programs is excellent to have in the youth department. But from my understanding, besides gym at the school, their athletic programs are not just programs. They create teams, and they have these school competitions with other teams. With the youth department, it's like an activity.
Yeah, the school is playing against other schools, and for the youth department, we'll make teams with the kids that we have.
We're not doing anything where the Hudson Department of Youth versus Albany's Department of Youth, you know?
Right.
Okay, thank you, Tiffany. Anything else for the youth department? Okay, Liz, Maya, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's moving along. We have, if I can find her. Are you there? Robin. Oh, yes, Robin Waters.
So, okay, so I just have a couple updates. We are finishing up with our process of hiring a clerk. We've sent out an offer letter. It has been accepted, so we are hoping that she can start in a few weeks. She is a born and raised in Hudson, and we're happy to have her on board. And so we just had an event at Oakdale to highlight some of our senior programs. We really had a lot of positive feedback about it. A lot of people would like to see more of that. So we're hoping to do something similar in the spring. And a couple things came up there. We had the event when the youth department was done with their program, so we needed to get the pay for the ADA accessible porta potty. So we decided to pay for it through the winters because it is all weather, all season. So that way, if anyone's at the park walking or something, they do have access to a bathroom. And just something to consider, it started to get dark and we were putting the lights on to clean up and everything. And it was quite beautiful to see the lights on at Oakdale. And I don't know the cost associated with doing that on a regular basis, but I do think it's something we should consider. It's like what Tiffany and Liz are talking about in terms of activities. It would really, you know, with the days coming so short, might be really great for people to have that as a space that can be, to be more active. So that was for Oakdale. And the fire department helped us out with our fire pit, and that people really enjoyed having the fire pit on the beach as well. Total different topic. The Columbia County Health Department will be hosting a pod to offer booster shots. That'll be on Saturday, November 13th from 9 to 11 at the Hudson Firehouse. Anyone is eligible who is 18 years or older and who has received their second shot of Moderna or Pfizer at least 6 months ago, and their Johnson & Johnson or their Johnson & Johnson vaccine at least 2 months ago. So transportation is available for that through the Office of the Aging, and they can reach out by calling 518-828-1527 if anybody needs a ride. Last year we did the fire department did a truck parade for the residents at the fireman's home. For the holidays, so we are going to try to do that again this year. I think I've mentioned before, we are partnering with the Hudson Area Library, the Office of Aging, and the Alzheimer's Association to create resources and programs geared towards anyone with memory impairments and their caregivers as part of our grant from the Berkshire Taconic Foundation. And so that's an ongoing process. If anyone is interested in hearing more about that, they are welcome to get involved. And I know some people are on the call because they're hoping to talk about the good cause law. And I just wanted to say that the problem that they've highlighted is really when people buy a house and or want to get more money from the rent, and so they'll evict people for no reason other than to make more money. That does affect seniors considerably. Sometimes they'll have like a month to find a new place, and on Medicaid and limited resources, it's just not enough time to be waitlisted for senior housing or to have any kind of chance at finding affordable housing. So I'm just putting that out there as it's a real issue for our seniors. And I think that's all I have in terms of updates, if anyone has any questions.
Thank you. Tiffany. Thank you. Tiffany, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, thank you. Robin, I'm sorry I haven't been in contact with you. I've been extremely busy on this end with constituents and everything else, but I want to update and see where I may be able to help or anyone on this council as far as assisting you with transportation for the seniors when there are certain events that are happening within the city. We have been discussing the subject for many years, and working with Robin, we can finally have something going and creating a schedule, so to speak. But we need to have something in place that we have, where the city has its annual events that we support and also participate in. We need to have a dedicated transportation for our seniors and also people with disabilities so they are able to participate and not feel excluded. I don't know which route at this particular time as we're speaking on it, which way to go, but we need to do something. And I'm asking everyone on this council to reach out to Robin with some ideas and suggestions of who and how, and to create a schedule for our seniors.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
And I mean it. I'm not just saying it so you all can be like, okay, next department.
Is there, yeah, because I think it would be great if we could coordinate our efforts, because there are a lot of different vans and resources, but in terms of coordinating and making sure that, you know, they can get to the events that we're funding, right? We want to make sure that everyone in the community has access to them. So thank you so much, Tiffany. I appreciate it.
Thank you to Robin.
Okay. Robin, I just want to say thank you for the invite. It really was a great time at the event. I know seniors were really enjoying themselves, and it was a great time for whoever came out and saw. It really was a beneficial deed. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. It was great to have you there.
Robin, this is Jane Trombley. Before we leave, before you're let off the hook, follow up Tiffany's really great suggestion about the transportation issue and bringing that topic to light. Could you provide, maybe, I don't know if this is the venue for it, but like the upcoming key events for which transportation is an issue and that would allow some of us to volunteer. I mean, for example, you know, the holiday tree lighting at the Public Square / 7th Street Park in early December, if there would be a need, I'm just throwing that one out as something that's top of mind, if there would be a need for transportation to that, if there's a need for transportation to COVID tests. I mean, I think just to sort of put the pieces together to understand where the need is and the time and the date, and then that, you know, I would be happy to participate, knowing specifically kind of what your calendar might be and where we might access that calendar now and going forward.
Thank you. It would be great to have you work on this with us. In terms of the events though, it wouldn't necessarily be the senior center events. It's more the community events that are happening. So I don't necessarily know what all of them are, but I just think that they should have access. Anyone who needs a ride should have access to go if they want to.
That's why I'm saying we all should work with you to create that schedule, because most of us on this council are involved with local organizations, along with annual celebrations that the city participates in. So we can work with that calendar together. So the only thing you need to know pretty much is like when new events pop up.
Well, and then how to coordinate the actual, you know, ride thing. I mean, an individual, you know, I mean, I would be happy to take some, you know, two or three people in my car, for example, to the tree lighting. There's just one. It's pretty minimal. It's not exactly, you know, a van. But of course I could do that. And it just feels like that coordinating piece is what is what's necessary. And each of us sort of made a commitment like that on these calendar.
And maybe instead of your car, you can drive the van, so your car wouldn't be
I don't think anybody wants me behind the wheel of a van. I just in the interest of public safety, but I'm happy to anyway, you know, Robin, I will coordinate with you and you know, see what, if there's somebody who, and see how we might work something out on that. Low base, but I'm not opposed to driving the van. I just don't think I'm the best person for it at all.
With the clerk starting, it'll be easier to identify who needs a ride and for people to reach out to her on a regular basis. So we can.
To whom? I'm sorry.
The clerk.
The clerk that we offered the position to get access.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So that'll help us to know the numbers of how many people need rides and what events. So.
Okay.
Also, Robin, just if you have anyone, you know, during the week that does need a ride to COVID, just get a hold of me and I can hook up transportation for anyone seeking COVID vaccination.
Okay, great. Is that just during the weeks or also on Saturday?
Right now during the week, but okay. I could work it out with my staff to possibly do Saturday hours too.
Okay, great.
If thank needed. All right. Yeah.
Robin, this is Margaret.
Please raise your hand in the future, everyone.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Sorry, may I speak?
Sure.
Yeah. So, Robin, don't forget that Medicaid offers medical transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all, it's if you have seniors who have Medicaid coverage, mm-hmm. they have Medicaid transportation to any medical appointment. So that is available always for all medical appointments.
Thank you. So does the healthcare consortium too.
Exactly. They are very good. So there are a couple of other options within the community to get people to medical appointments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Next up is our treasurer, Heather Campbell. Are you there somewhere? Just for your information, there's more. Eileen had her hand up. Hold on one second. Eileen, was there something? Eileen, if there is, you're muted.
There, sorry about that. Okay. I just wanted to know what kind of liability is there for the city with ride sharing using, citizens, volunteering to do that. But if it's under the auspices of a city effort, does that make a difference? Does it protect the driver or the passengers any better or make it any worse? I'm just not familiar with how that might work.
That's the van. But I think just like when we have to fill out for mass gathering permits, you have to write, whose insurance is under and everything else because of liability.
This is a good time for us to become familiar with that.
I think if it's not waived by the mayor, then it would be the responsibility on that driver, and then it would have to be paperwork signed by the senior department to allow that individual to go to your to get in your car. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those are just some of the things I wanted to make sure that we're thinking about as we move towards a program that might often involve private citizens driving or driving city property. Over and out.
Okay, we'll check into that. We were with Heather. Are you still there, Heather?
I still am.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen.
Please do. And while she's doing that, reminder, I need to, because there's so many people in attendance, you have to put up your hand so I can see you on the right-hand side of my screen. Otherwise, it's impossible to see everyone. Go ahead, Heather. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. So, it'll be relatively short today for a variety of reasons. Nothing much new on the ARPA front, but I left it here as a reminder. Still pending a quote from the labor attorney for the best practices and considerations for the accrual policy. So I will reach out to her again. I've been in touch with her for other topics, but not this one. I know she's been concentrating on the new union negotiations, so I think she might be a little swamped by that. The BEA meetings are concluded, and as you all should know, Mayor Johnson will be presenting the proposed budget to the council this Wednesday at 6 p.m., so you can look forward to that. We are still working on the 2020 audit and continuing to work with CEDC on the Tourism Board Reserve and the Planning Board. You will see a couple resolutions that are related to that this month. And I talked last month about new tax collection software. So we did get a demo. It's pretty fabulous. I mean, it's sort of going from like no phone to a mobile phone and skipping the entire landline experience in terms of its development. Unfortunately, the price tag is at this point somewhat prohibitive, but we will obviously be continuing to investigate that. My understanding is that the general ledger portion of the software will be continuing for some period of time. We are starting to have a lot of not unserious problems with the collection software, which is both for tax collection, for collection of water and sewer bills by DPW, and for receiving in of basically all revenues. It is very old and starting to not work well. So I will keep you posted on that as it goes. In terms of resolutions, right now you have one in front of you for tonight, which is just tourism board expenditures and a correction. So the expenditures are just some additional funds for swapping out dead plants in the planters with some new plants. The correction is just that that a number, well, the majority of the early payouts for the first half of the grants in 2021 were hit against what's called the Tourism Board expenditure account. They should really hit against the Tourism Board grant accounts. So that's just that component of that resolution is just to shift the budgetary item to the grants component and then move the charges that were hit erroneously against expenditures to grants so that we're capturing the amount we're actually spending on grants versus other expenditures more accurately. Two more resolutions that you should see, but we will not have them ready until the formal, unfortunately, is that if you all recall back in the day, the council authorized the mayor into entering into an agreement with I'm forgetting the name of it. Pattern for Progress. Thank you. To do an affordable housing plan. That was based upon the city being able to find enough money via pledges to cover the cost of the study. The city did do so, and so the study was done. So Hudson Housing Authority had committed $5,000, but a resolution was never done, at least as far as I can find, to accept that money. So that one will be one of the ones you see. And then the other funds are already in place through other resolutions. And so the second resolution will be authorizing moving those monies, which are currently being held in trust, into an expenditure line so that that invoice can be paid. Any question on any of that before I go into some of the data?
Let's hold off on questions to the end, okay?
Okay, so looking at our usual suspects in terms of revenue, you can see that in terms of parking revenues, it's pretty similar to the pattern we've been seeing the whole time. You can see that Front Street Municipal Lot is lower than budget. Parking tickets and parking and other permits are making up some of the difference. So we're at basically 84% of the year, and we're at roughly 80% of those four revenue combined. Obviously, parking tickets is the thing that's really driving us. And if we look at it year to date, you can see that on and off street parking, basically everything is higher than it was in 2020. But again, we also have to remember that 2020 was impacted by COVID. But you can see parking tickets is by far and away the largest increase. And I need to pull the 2019 numbers as well. So those are pre-COVID. So you can see Front Street, even though it's a bit of an increase versus 2020, it's still a considerable decrease versus 2019. And obviously, we will continue to monitor that to see if it ever does come back based on, you know, people's organizations' requirements for people to be in office versus working from home. And but you can also see on the opposite side, parking tickets is up even compared to where we were in 2020. So through October 2019, we were at 293. That dropped to 201 in 2020, and it's up to 348 in 2021. So that's obviously a good number to see. In terms of building permits and fees, again, this kind of consistent. We were somewhat conservative in our 2021 budget estimates based on what experienced in 2020. And so we're seeing a nice little bump up there. So we had a total of 135 budgeted. We're already at 150. So I expect that number to come in even a little bit more strongly. I apologize that this one is cut off, but you get the general idea from the year-to-date numbers. Mm-hmm. Here's some good news that is actually news. We got both our sales tax contribution for the second quarter, and also we haven't received the check for the mortgage tax, but for the mortgage tax, we received how much we're going to receive. And what you can see is sales tax contribution. Oh, sorry. It looks like I didn't update this upper chart here. Mm-hmm. I apologize. So let's just look at this one down here. So sales tax contribution for 2 months in 2020 was $811,000. This is a typo, obviously, $15,000. So the $811,000 was for the first two quarters of sales tax in 2020. For the first two quarters of sales tax in 2021, we're at $1.19 million. So that's a significant increase of almost $400,000. So that was excellent. And important because, as you see, when you look at the 2022 budget, we did make a pretty aggressive assumption in terms of 2022 sales tax, but it doesn't look aggressive compared to where we are year to date in 2021. So let's just hope that trend continues. Mortgage tax, again, we do not have the second check in yet, but I did receive information from Holly Tanner in terms of how much the payout would be. So I threw it in here. You can see that we were $112,000 in 2014, $165,000 in 2020. We had a budget of $140,000 for mortgage tax, which we blew away in the first half. And we received $159,000 for the first half and another roughly $62,000 in the second half. So this is our final year number. And we basically more than doubled what our estimate was for mortgage tax. So that was a great number to see as well. Ditto with lodging tax. This is obviously supposed to be 2019, apologies. We were at 112. We clearly saw a big dip in 2020, we saw a dip to 132,000. And currently year to date, we are already at 289,000. So that's looking strong as well. So those numbers are all very positive, and it seems like the big loss is in the Front Street municipal lot, but fortunately it looks like some of these other revenue streams are going to make up the difference on that.
Okay.
And that's it.
Thank you. Rebecca, you have your hand up. Any question?
I was just curious about the tax collection software that you're mentioning way back. Is that the same? I guess what I'm just asking is that tax collection what is currently being done by the company that is the vendor that you use? I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it.
No, that has nothing to do with lodging tax. That has to do with actual property tax collection and the collection of water and sewer bills and the receiving in of revenues that all the departments collect, everything ranging from, right, parking tickets to code enforcement permits.
Right. I know it's not, I knew it's not lodging tax related, but I'm trying to remember, and I'll check into this, but I'm pretty sure that Munirevs or lodging, there's two parts of that company. One is lodging revs and the rest of it is called Munirevs. I'm pretty sure that that's actually a big part of what their business is. So, and I think probably be worthwhile to talk to them about what their services are.
We have looked at them as well as a number of other vendors in the past. The problem is that we have some very, very, very specific requirements that almost no vendor provides. And one of those is the ability to allow delinquent taxpayers to go into a payment plan, basically. We call it an installment agreement. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty sophisticated back-end piece that almost no vendor has. Mm-hmm. There are a few other things that make it particularly challenging, which is one of the reasons why we are using such old software right now. The company that we're currently using, KVS, introduced, they have what's called KVS Standard, which literally looks like it's based on DOS, and that's what we're still using for collections.
Uh-huh.
Then they created something called Enterprise, which is, you know, basically like early 2000s WYSIWYG kind of thing, but we couldn't collections over to that because they didn't build in the installment agreement into that either. This new platform, which is going to be cloud-based, they're actually sort of skipping over the enterprise thing and trying to build everything from both enterprise and standard into this new cloud-based thing. So it will do everything that we need it to do, and it obviously would be a huge time savings, and it would obviously provide much greater access to data and reporting and all of those things. So, you know, it would be a great thing to do, but right now it's a little price prohibitive. But we will continue to look at the various vendors that are out there and compare them against what our requirements are. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next, any other council members? Heather, could you take down your screen, please?
I sure can.
Any other council members with questions or comments? Okay, we have a question from Bill.
Yeah, hi, Heather. Is the list of short-term rentals up on your webpage that you said you'd get up?
It sure is. It's been up there for a couple weeks now.
And is I just went on your webpage and I didn't see it. I'm wondering, is it, do I have to go into the 2021 documents?
No, if you go to the treasurer's website and you go down to the section that's about lodging tax, that describes lodging tax stuff,
uh-huh,
you should see a link right there. So rather than burying it in the documents, I put it up in the section that describes lodging tax requirements.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, thank you, Heather. Great news. I guess we can move along to Chief Moore. Unmute yourself, Chief.
Hang on.
There you go.
Can you hear me, Tom? Hi.
Yes, we can.
Hi, Mr. President. Good evening, everybody. Okay, so we have our mandatory reporting that I'll give to you first. We've sent the reports, the required reports, to the mayor. It came out of the police reform committee. And also I've emailed every council and alderman a copy of the statistics. So right off the bat, we had our monthly review of our body camera footage that was done dutifully by all our sergeants, and a consolidated report's been sent to the mayor's office. The report for the council, our monthly section 9 reporting, showed that in October we had two use of force incidents. There was no required intervention by the police officers. For the month, there was 51 total arrests. Some people were charged with more than one charge for a total of 84. We had 16 calls for emotionally disturbed people. So once again, that is a high number, disproportionate for the city, which is why we have to continue our efforts to construct our field team to proactively search out our EVPs throughout the city, especially as the bad weather is coming in. The best news I have from this report is that we had no drug overdoses in October, no uses of Narcan, and suspected overdoses. So that bucks the trend. We know that overdose deaths are up around 30% for the nation this year. So to have a month with no overdose is great, is actually great news. And going over, don't have that much to report this month, but going over the month's activity, we had our Sergeant Franklin attend on the 18th, the Women's Conference. where she represented the department. So we're very proud of her contribution there. We're continuing on with our pre-employment groups out at Columbia Green College. Again, to remind everybody, that is a way to encourage local people to join the force by allowing them to take academy credits at the college with financial aid, so that most of their police certification is done outside the department, outside normal police academy, and done at the college. And what we think this will encourage local people who are considering a career in law enforcement to take the classes and be available once the civil service test is given. On the 29th, we had our award ceremony out at the Elks Club. Some of you were there. It was a very good evening. A lot of awards were given out for life-saving and different meritorious service. One of my things I'm most proud of was a unit citation for the department over the award period, having 37 Narcan overdose saves. So 37 instances of saving someone's life potentially by using Narcan. So we're very proud of that. And that, so is that dog. The Halloween was very safe in City of Hudson. There was only two complaints of loud parties after hours, but it was very good for all the people that were in town. We're very pleased the lack of criminal complaints. We did do a quality of life detail on Halloween weekend, all just to check on noise complaints and different quality of life issues, and that was successful with very few complaints, very few issues reported. So we had to delay some of the things we intended to do in October because we did have a small COVID outbreak that put five civilians and officers on quarantine. So, but we were able to get through it without too much overtime expenditure, trying to stay within budget as we bring the year down to a close. So that's all I have, Mr. President, to report for this month.
Thank you, Chief. Tiffany has a question.
Thank you. I have a question about Chief Moore. When you mentioned that you all having more calls with people with mental trauma, mental issues, are you reaching out to the mobile crisis van that comes out? Are they still around?
100%. Catherine is part of the team that we've assembled through the hospital and through EMS, PJ Keeler, to try to kind of proactively go after these cases. So now MCAT is a huge part of it as we go forward.
So when you receive these phone calls, you know off the bat that this is a person that we've dealt with in the past that has mental issues?
Many times that's true, Tiffany.
So when you receive these calls, I'm asking, do you have, by law, do you have to go directly to address that call, or do you call mobile crisis team, being that you know, okay, this individual, we dealt with him plenty of times or her plenty of times, I'm going to have mental crisis address them?
We do both. So we'll assist. If a person is particularly violent, obviously it become more of a public safety concern. If it's someone we've dealt with continually, we'll let MCAT go in there and do their thing. Sometimes we'll secure the person and bring them up to the hospital. So it kind of varies with each case.
And the reason why I'm asking is because, from my understanding, with the mental health crisis team is supposed to help the police department. So time that is being spent, can be spent addressing more serious crimes that are happening within the city. Is that working with the mobile crisis team? Because if you have to do both and stay during each time, and just in case the person may be violent, isn't that like defeating the purpose?
Yeah, you're onto it. I'll tell you what's going on. The MCAT needs a substantial budget to get started. in order to send the team out proactively before it becomes a police issue. That's really what we're trying to do here, is let's get a team assembled of professionals that can go out, keep tabs on our people that are traditionally calling the police using hospital EMS services. Let's go out there proactively, check on those people, address their needs before the police get called. And ultimately, if the team is funded and works out good, might not need to call the police at all.
Okay. And how's it going with the translation?
As far as translation services?
Yes.
For our language line is up and running. We just used a translator from the community, I want to say 2 weeks ago, on an investigation. Of course, we work also with OCA in the courts with their language, their video language line, and a language line over at the court system. So I would say, you know, when we run into a language barrier, we have assets that we can bring to bear. So I think it's going all right.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tiffany. Malachi, you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Chief?
Quick
question. We know that the cold weather is upon us now, and just wondering, was there anything in place, any plans set in place to accommodate the homeless people on the cold weather this year? And if it is, what?
Yep. So they have a statewide Code Blue program that's actually well-funded, unlike some of our other issues. And when it gets to that point, there will be an issue Code Blue be put out over social media, and the location for a warming station will be announced. Not to mention our patrols will go out and check the known areas. Luckily, we have a small city, so we know the various places we can find homeless people and get them to a warming station. So it's been the past practice to do that, and we'll continue to do that. So that's what we got planned, Malachi.
And you saying the warming stations, what would that be?
There's been some discussion about where to do them. Sometimes it's the firehouse. There has been talk on the county level of providing it. And hopefully by the time we have the next meeting, the location and funding will be all set up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the council have a question or comment? Okay, Bill.
Yes. Before I start, Tom, I have a few things I want to ask the chief.
Two questions, Bill. Let's keep it to two.
How about three? I just want to remind you that you let somebody at last month's meeting go on for 5 minutes. I count it.
That's my prerogative. Bill.
It's your prerogative. Just want to remind you, you let somebody go for 5 minutes. Well, chief, you're still the parking enforcers are still part of HPD, is that right?
Well, technically, I'm in charge of their safety and their conduct and their productivity. I work in conjunction with City Hall, which also deals with other issues involving the parking enforcement people, like the computer program and fielding parking complaints.
But there's not a parking enforcement department, so they're under the HPD, right?
Not totally. If you read the Hudson City Charter, you see it's split up three ways.
Who is their supervisor? Who are they reporting to?
They report to me in the morning.
Okay. So I have a question. I'm wondering, one of your parking enforcers who collects the quarters from the machine, the meters, and fixes them, he seems to be doing it in his personal vehicle. Are you aware of that?
Yeah.
And is that okay?
Yeah, he had to compensate for some physical problems he's having. Those quarters weigh over 100 pounds, and he was unable to lift them. We don't have the budget or the vehicle provided for them. So
the city doesn't have insurance for his vehicle?
I haven't budgeted for insurance or for a vehicle.
It seems crazy to me.
Okay, Bill, questions.
I'm looking at comments. I'd like to make the comment that it seems kind of crazy to me that the one guy that's collecting all the quarters from every meter in town is doing so in his personal rusty 2005 pickup truck with no city logo on the side. And he's often not even in uniform when he's collecting the quarters in a plastic bucket. Second issue.
Point well taken. Point well taken, Bill.
I wish they had
that. Yeah. Second question. Are your officers still hanging out at the bottom of 9G by the South Bay to get to nab speeders coming into town? Is that still done?
Yeah, on occasion we do a speed detail down there. Usually when we're down there, we're doing it with multi-agencies.
Okay. It seems kind of crazy to me that there's you guys are down there catching people coming down a very steep and long hill at 50 mile an hour speed limit. There's no houses there. There's no pedestrians. And here, two blocks away from me, at Oakdale Lake, Glenwood, I see people coming speeding around those hills all the time. Pedestrians, we've got residents, we've got houses. I never, ever have seen one HPD officer down there trying to slow people down. It just, I don't get it,
okay.
You know? And I live at the corner of 6th and State, and up till 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I used to see you guys, your officers, waiting at 6th and State to get people running the stop signs here, and you used to get people all the time, and I just want to know, why don't I ever see any HPD officers at this dangerous and very fast intersection?
Duly noted, Bill. We spread our assets throughout the city, so it's not always in the same spot. It could be they're attending to enforcement in other areas.
I guess I'm puzzled, Keith, because literally I used to see an HPD officer here daily, sometimes numerous times throughout the day. I don't see them here anymore. I don't get it.
Bill.
And just to address that, the vehicle and traffic offense citations written has at one point before 2020, before the COVID year, was actually on a pretty sharp increase annually. We did have a hiccup here in 2020 and part of 2021 on traffic enforcement numbers. But I would project that as we get out of the pandemic, you'll start to see the enforcement increase.
So you're doing less of it? You don't want your officers to interact with people? Is that the idea?
No, it has to do with the sporadic COVID quarantines and lack of manpower. So what happens is when we quarantine a guy, obviously he's not available to write tickets.
I see officers.
Okay, Bill.
I appreciate that, Bill. Thank you.
Okay, Tiffany. You had a question?
One more question.
No, Bill, you're done.
Sorry, Bill. We have that digital sign that allows to tell that tells the drivers their speed limit, and I noticed it on Union Street, and I don't know how long it's going to be on Union, but I am requesting that it is placed on 2nd and State Street in between the low rise of Bliss Towers and the park. We have children that run back and forth, even with the crosswalks that are provided and the extended sidewalk paintings that were provided. But we still have people that speed tremendously in that particular street. And it starts from the light of 3rd and State. They put their foot on that gas and they just go all the way down. And we need something there. You know, we can't have officers standing there all the time. And once in a while we have people that receive tickets on State Street, but we need to have them in cars so they can go after these speeders as well. But I'm requesting that same digital sign to be in the second ward on 2nd and State, please.
We will do that. It's like we've discussed this, I think, off and on, Tiffany, as you've been on the council. We've had that sign there, and some of the improvements we made there with the painting and visibility. And it's true, there's a stop sign there, and sometimes we don't nab them for speeding because they don't come up to speed. But you're right, with the playground there and things like that, it is an important area. And yes, we will get the radar sign over there.
Thank you, Chief.
You're welcome.
Malachi.
Oh yeah, just to piggyback off of what Tiffany was just saying, I would really love to see a digital sign on 540 Columbia Street where the Head Start is as well. People are speeding through there on a daily basis. I know that because that's where I work. So if we can get something up there as well, Chief, we'll definitely be appreciative.
That's a particularly bad spot with people parking in the municipal lot, then walking off the crosswalk, and then you have trucks coming through there. Yeah, that's a pretty bad spot. We're familiar with that one, Malachi. And yes, we can also do something up there. Duly noted.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Okay. No other hands up. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, everyone.
I see that... our representatives of the fire department are now here. If you are, you're muted.
I'm here, Tom.
There we go. Go ahead, Nick. Your report. You're muted, Nick.
Yep, sorry. Let me just get back outside.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I'm on vacation for the week, so.
Oh, I thought it was a party at the firehouse.
No, I'm in South Carolina for the week. So nothing, no major report. I don't have anything right in front of me. And as the mayor and the council president know, we had a little issue at the firehouse last week and a half ago. We had a fire in four of our light fixtures, an electrical fire in the truck bay. The Leggett Electric has been there for the last week and a half, replacing all of the lights. Four of them burned up pretty bad. We've called the insurance company. They're involved. And all of the lights on the truck floor have had to be replaced at the recommendation of Leggett Electric. So there were no more issues. We're still waiting for the insurance company to make their final determination. Based on that, I know they were there today trying to finish up putting the lights in, and hopefully that is completed this week. Other than that, I don't really have anything else.
Okay, thank you. Tim is here also, Commissioner. Tim, do you have anything to add?
No, just that. That was all of the LED lighting that was added about 7 or 8 years ago under a grant. So all of that's being pulled out and replaced.
Okay, any questions from the council? From the public?
Tom, I don't know how to raise my hand. May I ask a question?
Sure.
Thank you. This is Margaret Morris. So this is a general question. So when we started our session here this evening, you went into executive session because you had some client lawyer stuff to deal with relating to litigation, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
My general question as a member of the public is that if the city of Hudson, I have absolutely no idea what their issue was, but if the city of Hudson is being sued or is in some kind of litigation, the council represents the people of Hudson. Even if we cannot comment, is it possible for us to take back and think about the possibility that we should be allowed to listen? To know what the litigation is, why we are being sued, what we are being sued for.
Well,
it's genuinely, Tom, it's genuinely an open question.
I'm happy to answer it. First of all, there is a resolution at hand tonight that will address what's happening.
Okay.
And that resolution will be introduced tonight. So there'll be an entire week to contemplate it before we vote on it next week. But I think as preparation, since I understand you'll be a councilman soon, you might go and read about the open meetings rules on the New York State website. Certainly, if there's litigation involved, there's a certain allowance for executive sessions. But there are very precise rules for executive sessions. Okay. And you can find it on the...
I'm genuinely just trying to understand it.
Yeah, I understand.
That's all. And if I can reach out to you offline, and you can point me to the appropriate places to read the rules, and I would be happy to do so.
Okay, just go to New York State Open Meetings. You'll get it.
Okay.
Moving right along, is Rob with us? Rob, there he is. Here we go. And Shaheem will post your...
I got it.
Oh, okay.
I'm getting an old hat at this now. Good to... The sewer plan for September was $42,500. As I discussed, it came up in several other discussions about, the necessity of the street sweeper to grab as much material as possible. You know, even with that process, we still get fine grits that get through into these digester tanks. And you can see it looks almost like sand. It just stays in suspension, and actually within the sludge itself gets put up there. So we have to bring these vac trucks in, and you're running about $10,000 a day to suck all of this material out. Why is it important that we suck the bottom of these tanks out? Well, because it actually will cover, there's actually diffusers, which you can see some remnants of it here, and these are blowing air out, and the air is essential to the treatment process. And without the air, it goes anaerobic and our process doesn't work. And you can see after everything is removed, you have a nice little even distribution of air amongst the tank. And that's what the bugs want. The bugs want, it's a living microbiological process, and the bugs want air and they want food, and that's what we give it to them both. Yeah. So also a lot of maintenance going on down there at the sewer plant. This is the muffin monster, which from the septic system, you can see these bristles here. They're all worn down and pitted. It's part of the screenings process, which takes out as much solid material as possible before it hits our pumps. This is the screen that this sits inside of, and portions of it had broken. So we had we patched it with some welds. Also the polymer system. The polymer just makes whatever's like in liquid form, makes it kind of congeal, if you will, and thicken up, and then it's easier to remove from the process. This machine was part of the original treatment plant upgrade 10 years ago, and it's been repaired numerous times, but it just hit a point between the controls and the motor and some other things that were cracked that we just had to do a total replacement. So, it doesn't look like much, but that's $25,000. Out of the sewer fund, but it's an essential part of our treatment process, and so that's where it goes. Shifting to water, a lot of annual seasonal maintenance. So this is out at the Churchtown Reservoir, and there's the gatehouse over here. This is the dam. So the water comes through these gates, and it's got all sorts of, schmutz on it, and these gates catch it, so that way we start the filtration process even out in Churchtown. And, you can just see how much, this is on the downstream side of it. This is the upstream side. You can just see how much, real like organic crap just kind of sits there. So once we pull these out, they weigh about 300 pounds each. So we have to use a 1-ton crane to physically pull them out of the channel. We set them down, and then we use a pump with a hose and hose them down and get them all cleaned up, and we put them back in place. So also last week we did a seasonal maintenance. We did, we flushed hydrants. We do that in the middle of the night to cause have the least disruption to people, because most people aren't up, taking showers in the middle of the night and so forth. So that's something we do, and then we get as much of the whatever might be kind of in suspension, around the inside of the mains, to flush them out. And I don't know if anybody's aware or not, if anyone was going to bring it up, but we did have some complaints today of some discolored water in the area of State Street around 4th, 5th. Two things at issue. One, this time of year, the reservoir is doing what we call turning, which is the cold water is denser than warm water. So the water that's on top is being cooled by the nighttime air. And as it becomes colder, it becomes more dense and it falls to the bottom. When displacing the water that's on the bottom, which brings a little bit of, you know, some extra little spoons up with it. So, you know, we take that out during the treatment process, but you know, while this process happens, there's just a little bit more oxidation going on. And also the other thing is with the paving project that's underway that I'll get into a little bit, a couple minutes. You know, we have to fill the equipment up with water. They tag hydrants to do that. And so sometimes that causes disruption. But anytime there's any discoloration, just please run cold water only out of your tub fixture, not anything with an aerator or a screen on it. Just go to your, or a slop sink in the basement. Let it run for about 10, 15 minutes, should be fine. Seasonal winter prep. Oh, so we actually take the snowblower out usually in the, you know, the late fall, mid to late fall. And in this issue, we found that the radiator had some pitting in it. That happens. That you have to remember the blower is running at 2 o'clock in the morning and the snow has salt in it, and the salty air is coming in through the radiator to keep the engine cool. So, you know, we take extensive care to hose it down and get it as clean as possible. But, you know, it only takes a little tiny minute bit of salt and contact. And the fact that it sits idle for, you know, 9 months out of the year, 10 months out of the year, it just gives some contact time. So we're just having that repaired. We want to make sure that when winter is upon us that we're, you know, we're ready to deal with it. The docks. So these are the slip docks came out. We used some of the docks to pull these arms down, and you can see the arm from the loader that we put a jib crane on and hoist it out. And this is actually the same crane that we use out of Churchtown Reservoir to pull the screens out. This was a way to, because this is the ramp that goes to the river docks, which probably weighs, I don't know, 1,500 pounds. It's pretty intense. So we've, at this point, they're working on the ground surrounding this, but this is the splash pad, and it has its little slip. It's kind of like a little rubbery thing. They spray paint it, and they put some sealant on it. It's hard to tell with this picture, but it's, you know, kind of an abstract of a whale, and there's a other little surprise up there, which I'll let you guys figure when you see it in real life. There was a little change to the design. But so that's down. You know, that's obviously set for the winter. And there's beginning to backfill the material. You know, with the park itself, you know, there's going to be delays. We're having trouble getting the quarried stone, which is something I addressed last month. We're having issues with the contractor, the subcontractor providing the railing for the ramps. So you can't use the ramps without the railings, and we don't have the stones for the steps yet. So the goal was January 31st. There's no way we're going to meet that. It's just the supply chain is pushed out, just like it is with everything else. And you know, the goal is to get it done in the springtime. We think that's very achievable. But, I mean, January 31st, I mean, it doesn't – I mean, who's really using the park in January 31st? You know, February.
Okay.
I'll let you know when I see him there. All right, so what else do we got? Oh, the block's coming off of Warren Street. And another shout out. This is actually Greenport's crew. They gave us some assistance. So the Hudson crew was on the street snatching them and putting them on the trailer. And the Greenport crew was down behind our garage unloading. Back to Promenade Hill, sorry. Just the last bits of conduit for the street lights were installed. You know, it looks a little goofy like this, but we try and make these sweeps as wide as possible so when grid pulls the wire, it moves easily. This is actually at the quarry, and these are some of the seating stones that they have to, you know, they cut. I showed the templates last month or the month before, so they cut these in order, and they make sure they match up. So that's part of this kind of the seating that'll be off on the side. CHIPS project, which is the highway resurfacing project, DOT, this is all DOT money, and it comes to us annually. One of the requirements is that anywhere where we repave a street, we have to do the ADA ramps. So What you have here is demolition of an old sidewalk. There's the new sidewalk there with ramp. We also have, we finished up some more of the manholes and there's a lot of infrastructure upgrades have to take place prior to the contractor coming through a milling and servicing the road. So, today we've got Spring Street partition below Second. Prospect and Dodge have all been milled, and I believe all but Spring Street have one layer of base. So partition, I believe, is done. If not, it'll be finished tomorrow. So mostly this round of streets should be done within the next day or two. Then we'll start moving to the bigger streets. Green Street is going to be a lot of fun. We did the first half probably about 7 years ago, 5 or 7 years ago, I can't remember. This is the lower half from McKinney Street down to State Street. So there's going to be a lot of action when that one takes place. This is just anecdotal, some of the weird things that we find when we mill. This is actually a 6-inch cast iron water main, and it's pretty near the surface. So it's a little bit perplexing because it's not like somebody just threw it there as a drain, because it actually had the lead and oakum joints that would have been installed in the early 1900s. So it's definitely looks like it's original. The only thing that I could speculate is I remember reading something in something like that. Something about a water source near Spring Street. I mean, obviously the street's called Spring Street for a reason. Some type of water source there from the early 1800s, maybe 1840s. That would have been about the same time the fairgrounds were here. So this might have just been something they charged in the summertime. Most people realize the Chatham Fair was originally in Hudson for its first 4 or 5 years before it moved to the current location. Let's see. Sidewalks. Spring Street Bridge. So we did have, this is Milled Streets. This is Spring Street here, and this is Partition. So you can see the concrete subbase that's underneath most of our roads, and that's what we go down to, and then we put the new asphalt on top of it. This is something that, so as I discussed last month, there are three things that the engineer are kind of looking for some guidance on. One of the things is the fence material, one is the street lights, and one is the kind of the wall, the stone face to go on the retaining walls that will be along the approaches. So I did send these storyboards or whatever you want to call them, posters. Anyway, the library has graciously agreed to put them on display. So if somebody wants to see the full-size version, they're there. I did present these electronic versions to the Historic Preservation Commission this past Friday, simply because, this is kind of their expertise. So, I did send it to them. They had a series of questions. And so those questions, I put together and I forwarded on to the engineer. And we'll see, we'll see where we're going. But, all in all, it was a favorable experience. This is the old pedestrian bridge. So there's questions about this pedestrian bridge here, which this is from 2014 when the DPW guys are putting the plywood down. This is also going to be demolished because the bridge is not only going to be much wider to the south, it's also going to be wider to the north. We'll be taking that entire footprint. The finished bridge will have not only just two car lanes, but also two bike lanes and two pedestrian lanes that will be separated by a barrier. So that goes to the NYPA thing came up during the budget discussion. I know you guys have had presentations before. I know I was in presentations with both Mayor Rector and Mayor Johnson. This thing's been kind of going around for 2 or 3 years now. I don't want to oversimplify it, but to simplify it, we pay $15,000 a month to National Grid just for streetlights. And of that $15,000 to $16,000 a month, $10,000 is the lease of 900 overhead lights. And that's never going away. They call it a lease, but it's not a lease to own. It's just a rental price, essentially. So the discussion maybe three mayors ago was about the city looking at the opportunity of, you know, taking over those lights or replacing those lights or whatever. But then was a question of how to finance. You know, there's a whole mess of regulatory issues after you're talking about the Public Service Commission. So NYPA, who is a state agency, they are the New York Power Authority. So it's not like they're necessarily some sales guy off the street. You know, they have this program because of the complexity of the process where they actually manage the project for us. And what they do is they handle all the capital stuff. So they handle the capital purchase, which of the lights, existing inventory is about $250,000. And then there's another $200,000 that has to be put in escrow to make sure that the city does some kind of, some infrastructure upgrades when we take over the stuff, take over possession of it. And, you know, so NYPA is actually the one that would manage all that for us. And they would structure the capital costs over, you know, a period of, 10 or 15 years or however we chose to do it. The thing is that, you know, if you look down here, annual cash flow is like $7,000. You're literally talking about $7,000 more a year out of $180,000. You still have to pay for the energy. But what he doesn't tell you is that you'd be switching to, when we do the conversion to put new lights in, we would obviously be putting LED lights in. So you're no longer going to have, you know, high pressure sodium 150 or most of them are 400 watt bulbs. You're going to have, you know, LED lights that are whatever 100 watts. So your energy is going to go down. So it's really a no brainer. And I'm just kind of bewildered it's taken this long to get to back to where we started. But here's the breakdown. This is the kind of what they need to do next is we need an agreement with the city so that way they can start doing their feasibility study. Because this is all based on numbers that we provided based on our energy bills and the contracts that we have in place, you know, but they need to do the hard thing. They need to get the hard numbers through grid and, you know, the numbers that we have are outdated too. So, but you know, there's a cost to them to do that. If, you know, we have 896 lights, obviously if we go forward on the program, those costs are amortized into the program. If we say, no, we don't want it, then we have to pay them back for their capital costs, which I think they estimated like $100,000. But I can't imagine the city not wanting to get rid of these lease. It's literally $10,000 a month we're just wasting. And we're going to be wasting them forever. So at least we get into this NYPA agreement. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's a long tunnel. It's a 10-year-old tunnel, a 12-year tunnel, but there's a light there. So this is, you know, back, and I know this has come to you guys before, so you can do what you need to, and I think that's it for me.
Well, Rob, you'll be glad to know that is definitely back on the table.
Perfect.
We're moving ahead with
Excellent.
It. Secondly, I have my first question for you, though. There's been a number of upwards of like 10 corners where new ADA corners have been put in. Is that part of the project you were talking about earlier?
Yes, those okay. streets will be paved.
So they're paving streets. And it didn't come out of the regular DPW budget.
Correct? No, it comes out of DOT money, CHIPS money.
Excellent. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Yeah, DOT won't reimburse us unless we do the ramps.
Excellent.
So, right?
Okay, because I had a question.
By the way, they're $5,700 each.
Yeah. No, that's... So
anybody who thinks that the city should be in the sidewalk business, that's... I did the sidewalk in front of my house for $5,000. One of those corners is $5,700. It's going to cost twice as much for a city to do a sidewalk than that.
Okay. Tiffany has her hand up. Tiffany?
Thank you. Hello, Rob. When you just mentioned, just how you said, when the curb corner's done, you can't do something unless you do the ramp. Where would these ramps be located?
Well, they're on 2nd and State. They're on 3rd and State. They're on 3rd and Columbia. They're on Dodge and Prospect, Dodge and State. They're on 7th and State. They're on State and Green. They're up at Frederick and Green and McKinstry and Green. They're also down at Partition in front. And I think that might be all of them. Maybe I forgot one or two.
2nd and State, you said? That was the first part?
No. 2nd and Columbia and 3rd and State.
Okay. 2nd and Columbia. Where on 2nd and Columbia?
They're right there. They're brand new. They're right there. Just go look at them.
Are you talking about the curb corners? I'm talking about the ramps.
Yeah, yeah, they're there.
I don't see them. Okay. Oh, my other question, or actually it's a request. The curb corners are a beautiful thing, and I know a lot of my constituents are happy to finally have them there. But there is a little replacement that needs to be done with the, I guess you call it blacktop, for the street where the curb corner is placed on 2nd and Columbia. The corner,
yeah, that's going to be paved. That's next week.
So you're next week. With the gap that's between the street and the curb corner.
That's it. It's all brand new next week.
Thank you, because I would hate a horrible accident, especially when it's covered by the snow. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dominic, you have a question? Oh, sorry. Dominic, you're up. Dominic?
Thank you. Rob, just a quick question. We have a resolution in front of us regarding painting parking spots. And the way I read it, it looks like it's citywide. Were you consulted, and how much is that going to cost to do something like that? And is it in this year's budget? Because it's supposed to be done by 2022.
Well, no, it's not in this year's budget for sure. And we don't paint this time of year typically anyway. We'll be doing some of the crosswalks on top of the newly paved roads, but that's because the blacktop's still warm. No, I wasn't consulting, but that's nothing normal, nothing unusual. It did, I mean, it's not the first time it's come up. You know, it's come up with previous administration. You know, the reality is how much you want to pay for it. I mean, the reality is you got 25 miles of street. You know, I mean, if you take out the alleys, I don't know, you take out some of the longer streets, let's say you get down to 10 miles, and you got to put stripes on both sides of the street, so you're back up to 20 miles. And so now you take 20 miles, 20 miles times 5,280 feet is 105,000 linear feet, divided by 22 feet wide, which is the length of these. That's 4,800. So 4,800 parking spots. We put down 8 feet away from the curb and 1 foot a hash, so that's 9 feet. So that's times 9, and it's $1.50 a foot. So you're talking about $65,000. So you got that kind of change laying it around, we'll get the contract up and we'll do it for you. You're gonna lose 10% of your parking space.
That's why I was gonna ask. I didn't see much of the data, so I was wondering
all you gotta do is you go to Warren Street, you see how much distance there are between those spaces, and then go over to Allen or Union Street, see how much distance is between those cars. Average car length is 15 feet. Your parking spots are 22, and the math is easy. You know, you got 7 feet, 3.5 front, 3.5 back. I mean, it's fine for a commercial district. And also, you know, there's meters. You know, that's why, you know, that's where we paint them where they want meters. So I don't know if you guys were suggesting there be meters citywide. Was that what the resolution's about, to pay for this product?
Oh, no.
Well, what do you mean? Somebody's got to pay.
Barely afford the rent over here. We don't need meters, too. You expect the public to run out at midnight or a quarter?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob.
Moving right along. Thank you, Rob. Any other questions for Rob while he's here? From the public? Anyone? Okay, so that's it for our reports for tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. So, Shaheem, let's get started with tonight's resolutions. Excuse me. First resolution, can someone... Someone needs to mute themselves. I don't know who it is. The first resolution is appointing Commissioner of Deeds. Do I have an introduction, please? State your name, because I can't really see you.
Council. Ryan, I'll introduce.
Ryan, do I have a second?
Duan.
Thank you, Duan. The next resolution, please, Shaheen. This is just a the chargeback for the EMS services. It's a wash. There's no expenditure here. It's for the rescue squad.
The rescue squad services. It's Ryan. I'll introduce Tom.
Okay. A second.
Duan.
Thank you, Duan.
Is this something new?
No.
No, it's annual.
It's annual.
Remember saying that the price is annual too, or did it go up?
No, I think it was that last year too. Next resolution, please. This resolution just authorizes the mayor to sign a contract extension with Passport Labs, who handle our parking ticket processing services.
I'll introduce.
Thank you, Eileen.
Duan.
Thank you, Duan.
What does this mean?
I'm sorry. I can't hear you, Tiffany.
Can you explain what does this mean? Because I can't barely see it on the share extension with Passport. What is this? What does that mean? They get more hours? They get more tickets? What does that mean?
It means we use them for their services in the future, as we have in the past.
These are the people that print out the tickets?
These are the people who provide the entire processing services, which means the handheld instruments, the whole thing.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. The next resolution, please, Shaheen. Okay, this is the next part where... You recall the small section of Montgomery Street that we're discontinuing because the contiguous property owners would like to buy the property. It's a dead end that serves no public purpose. Can I have an introduction, please?
Why do they want to buy it?
They want to put trees. I don't know. They'd like to extend their property. Can I have an introduction? Oh, Duan? Thank you. A second, please.
Eileen.
Thank you, Eileen. Okay. Shaheen, skip the next one because there's a lot of people here for that. We want to do them together later in the meeting and get these simpler ones done. So go to the rule of order amendment. As you know, this is a rule of order that we're changing just to provide some clarity for... how we pick majority and minority leaders. This was sent to the council members quite some time ago. Can I have an introduction, please?
Mm-mm.
What was that?
Can I out loud? Sorry.
Is there any way we can address this? I just want more time to review it because I've been...
That's fine. You'll have plenty of time between now and next week. I'm just looking for an introduction and a second.
The table.
I like them.
Wow, one at a time, please.
Well, I was talking. So I'd like to make a motion to table this at this time.
Why?
I'll second his motion.
I don't need a reason why. I just like to table this for more information.
And I'll second his motion.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Okay, can I have a... all those who would like to table this, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Who would not like to table it?
Aye.
Okay, we need a roll call vote. Although we can discuss it first. I mean, you've had much time to look over this rule. And we're not, excuse me a second, we're not voting on it tonight. We're just introducing it. So you have another full week to think about it. Now we can vote. Anybody want to say anything further?
Yeah, Tom, would you just make it clear when you, I think you were going to go around and say who wants to do something with it. What are we voting on? Tabling?
Yes, or? We're voting on tabling right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Correct. So, Ryan, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
Okay, hold on a second. Rebecca, do you wish to table this?
No.
Eileen, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
Dewan, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
Jane, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
Trying to read this here. Dominic, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
Tiffany, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
Malachi, do you wish to table this?
No.
Shersha, do you wish to table this?
Yes.
And I vote no as well. It's 7-3. This is tabled. Till our formal meeting next week.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
We have still one more month, right, Tom, before we decide? We could decide next month, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just, we'd like to have this in place before the new year, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Not the selection, just whether this is right. How the process is going to go.
Exactly, Eileen.
Okay.
So we can avoid the problems we've had in the past.
Well, it won't be any fun, but okay.
Tom, let me get this right. This is tabled to next month.
No,
right?
It's tabled to next week.
Next week, yeah. Next week, okay.
That makes no sense. If it's tabled to next week, then what was the point of voting tonight for it to be tabled? That makes no sense.
I agree.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be tabled next month for discussion in a legal committee.
It's tabled for December so we can discuss it.
No.
That's not how it goes. Because
it is how it goes. You should have made it clear that's what you wanted. It's tabled to the next meeting. Now moving.
It was clear. That's how he stated it. It is.
Absolutely. I said the next month.
Okay, we'll check that in the notes and see what happens. There's a record.
Okay.
And I said on it. But go ahead.
Okay. But we could also table it if you discuss the next meeting, the formal, we can go through the process again and table it to December. If that's
what you want to do. I'm baffled by this completely.
I'm glad you're baffled, but it's still something we should do.
Really?
Thank you.
Simplest thing. Okay, Shaheen, the next, please. Okay, we've done this before. This is a resolution authorizing the settlement of Article 7 proceeding with Man-and-Man Properties. If you're wondering what the property is, it's the beer and wine and liquor store on Green Street, and this is at the recommendation of the assessor and the attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have an introduction, please?
Ryan, I'll introduce.
Thank you, Ryan. Can I have a second? Can I have a second, please?
Shersha.
Thank you, Shersha.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a question, Tiffany?
Yes. Can you please explain this resolution? I don't understand. What does this mean? Does somebody have to pay? Like,
no.
What's going on?
The original assessment was challenged by the property owner. This is to settle it at a lower assessed value of the building.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see, where are we? Okay, the next resolution, please, Shaheen. Oh, This is great. This is a resolution appointing Vanessa Bear, who no longer works at the Youth Center, by the way, Youth Department, to the Conservation Advisory Council. Can I have an introduction, please?
Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. Can I have a second, please?
I'll second it, Rebecca.
Rebecca? Thank you. Okay. The next resolution, please. This resolution was put forth by Malachi, and Dominic addressed it earlier, and you heard what it would take in order to do this. Can I have an introduction, please?
Again, Tom, I think we need to find out how we're going to pay for this before we put a resolution and time frame and what it includes. So I don't know what committee you want to form, but, you know, this is also something that the new council can take over the first of the year, because you're talking about the money that we don't want to spend that the next council is then tasked with. So mm-hmm. I think in terms of this situation, we should table it so we can find out more information. Table it until a better committee to find out information before passing this.
If he's making the motion, I'm seconding that motion. I totally agree. And if it's going to take up more parking spaces and the whole city is screaming about how we need more parking spaces, we don't need to eliminate them. We need to come up with a better plan and a better solution. So if you're making a motion to table, then I'm seconding it.
All those in favor of tabling the resolution, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anybody opposed? The resolution is tabled. Okay, next. Reporting on the New York State Local and Local Employees Retirement System. This is just adding Ryan to the retirement system. Can I have an introduction, please?
Duan.
Thank you, Duan. Can I have a second, please?
Eileen.
Ooh, that's hard to... I think Eileen was there first, Shersha.
You did one. You can do it.
Okay, Shaheem, skip the next one for now, because we'll deal with both of those at once. And number 12, or let's see, yes. This is a resolution that was put forth by, believe it or not, the Daughters of the American Revolution, recognizing the month of November as National American Indian Heritage Month. Thank you, Duan. Can I have a second?
Yeah, sure. I would like to ask a question.
Whoa, one at a time. I think Rebecca was first. Go ahead, Rebecca.
I'm sorry if this is a really dumb question, but I believe that we don't use the phrase American Indian. Am I totally wrong about that?
That's correct. I was commenting on that, and also they should, if they're going to add that, they should add the more people as well.
What?
Like, and I mean, if you read more. This resolution, it says Native American Awareness Week began in 1976, and approved by George Bush in August 1990, designating the month of November as National American Indian Heritage Month. That is like, in
Got
my
it. I
entire
understand
lifetime,
what you're saying.
We say Native American, we don't say American Indian.
So you want to take the word Indian out?
Well, I feel like they need to go back to do their homework, whatever it is that they need to do.
Got
the government
it.
Website, Rebecca, to back you up on that is Native American Heritage Month.
There's no okay, so we can actually just take out all the reference to Indian. And,
but I mean, it just
I can't have everybody.
Sorry.
Who wanted to speak?
I
just wanted to say maybe we should check with, did you say it was the DAR that proposed
Correct,
this?
And this just copies their language, unfortunately, I guess.
Right, but if we want to change it, it seems like the the polite thing to do would be to talk to them and at least tell them why we want to change it. Maybe they'd agree.
I agree with that.
Okay, we'll do that.
So is that a motion to table this, Eileen?
Well, we've already introduced it and seconded it, but we'll try to change it between now and when we bring it back up.
Okay, good.
Change. Talk to.
I mean, I would also like to say that you know, there's a significant Native Indigenous population represented, like, within the county, and like there's an organization called Forge that's working on issues around like Indigenous people's presence in the, you know, the community, et cetera. I feel like this is just not a sufficient representation of.
Well, it's a very simple kind of resolution, just declaring that we're recognizing that it's a heritage.
You want to recognize a simple resolution correctly and not have people offended.
Right.
Well, we already determined that. That's not what Rebecca's talking about. We're going to take out any of that. But
you don't know, you know.
Well, it sounds like this. I didn't hear this getting introduced and seconded,
well,
but it seems to me like it should be tabled and sent back to them to like have more conversations they've had.
Who introduced and who seconded? Because I didn't hear it either.
It was Dewan and Shersha. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, we will revise it before we go forward with it.
And Tom, this is Eileen. I'd be glad if you're going to talk to the people from the DAR. I'd be glad to be part of that conversation.
Sure. I think they don't understand. They don't understand that it's not called this officially. It's called, apparently, what did Ryan say? National
Native American Heritage
Month. Native American Heritage Month. So we will get that, see if they're willing. I mean, we don't have to follow what they want, but we can tell them that we're going to do that. And there we go.
I just also want to understand whether are they just trying to propose that the city of Hudson recognize a month that is already nationally recognized?
Yes. Yes, that's all it is.
I see. Okay. Gotcha.
Thank you. Okay. The next resolution, Shaheem. Nope, down. Tourism board.
Down.
There you go. Okay, this is just two things that Heather referred to earlier. One is a payment that's been approved by the tourism board, and the second is just changing budget lines in their accounting, in her accounting system. Do I have an introduction, please?
Eileen, I'll introduce.
Thank you. Thank you, Eileen. A second, please. Mm-hmm.
Shersha.
Thank you, Shersha.
Tom?
Yes, Dominic.
Thanks. I don't want to baffle you again, but in terms of this resolution, just a few concerns that I have regarding how this process went through. My understanding is that the $5,000 was never approved by the tourism committee until recently, after the expenditure was made for the tune of $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, I think we should implement some kind of bid process, because I think this is outstanding that, you know, we're committing $5,000 of unauthorized spending. I appreciate Ryan is now handling this appropriately moving forward, but I do think that we need to emphasize moving forward, and I'm sure Ryan's going to take the lead with this, that this is not going to be tolerated. You know, that we're spending this money and people are allocating money that they had no, and it's not the first time. So somehow we need to reel some of these things in. And again, I'm having confidence that Ryan's going to do it, but I think we need to, as purse holders, be accountable for this kind of activity. Just my two cents.
Okay. I don't recall this happening before with them. spending money that hadn't been allocated, but I'll assume you're correct. You're right. I mean, I was baffled by this myself. You can't just, I mean, you can't put it through a process at this point. I don't know what to say.
No, Tom, it's Ryan. If I can just chime in too. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think the board themselves knew the decision had been made by the manager. Money had been allocated already for the planters, but again, as it says in here, a lot of them were neglected and died, unfortunately. I think the flip side of this, though, is, and not, you know, staking claim to it per se, but in Heather's presentation, we did see the sales tax revenue and the lodging tax up. Not that that's directly related to this per se, but in the wash of the cost of doing business, it is a small investment to make. It's also coming out of the reserve fund that was set aside, and that still carries over into next year's monies as well. All that said, I agree with you, Dominic. Bid process moving forward, and the board and I have discussed making sure that there is a better system of checks and balances in the new year.
And I guess I'd also ask what would you recommend that we not pay it? I mean, I agree with you totally, Dominic. It should have been approved before they went ahead and agreed to the extra plants.
This is Jeff saying.
I'm sorry, what?
At this point, this is obviously we got to pay it, but this also looks bad on the city that they're waiting this long. A business is waiting this long for payment. This whole thing is just inappropriate in how it was handled. And I guess it goes back to, you know, the tourism board and how, you know, like, again, we're having, you know, people talk about the tourism board, you know, unfortunately, in some different opinions. And this is what leads to why people feel the way they do about the tourism board and how they're handling the finances. And this is just, you know, another evidence of that. So I don't know.
When you say I'm sorry, Dominic. When you say another evidence, I'm unaware of. I mean, what are you referring to?
No, it the public has already had, you know, their opinions on the tourism board, and you know, in terms of, and I, again, personally, with the debacle with, you know, the ADA porta potties, and again, here comes Ryan again to the rescue that at late minute. You know, that he addressed it great, but it shouldn't have been that way. So I'm saying that somewhere along the line, there's got to be accountability, you know, to these actions. And again, putting a bid process in place for a certain amount, maybe we need to say, tourism board, you're going to spend this kind of money, or there's got to be a bid process.
Yeah. The one thing I want to point out with this one, though, is that this was done even without the board knowing it. This was a unilateral decision made by the program manager for this one. I think the board was just as shocked to see that this has been so late in terms of coming up, which is why we're getting to it tonight to make sure that we do allocate it. So I hear you on some of the other issues and the perceptions. I think you know we're working hard to change that for next year too, based on whatever the budget is that we'll find out at the BEA meeting.
Right. I agree. And just because the perception that somebody's not watching the store, that's all. And now I feel someone is. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks.
Okay. So we go back to the...
Tom, do you want to do the Verizon settlement first?
Thank you for reminding me, Jeff. Shaheem has it. Shaheem, I believe, has it. It's the one I sent you in an email, Shaheem.
There's a resolution that goes with it.
There's a resolution.
You want the resolution?
I think he has it. He should have it, I think.
No, I don't have a resolution.
Okay, Jeff, you want to post it?
Yeah, just let me share my screen.
Yep.
Boom.
Can you see that?
Yes. Okay. This is a resolution authorizing the mayor to sign a settlement agreement with Verizon Wireless. So a little history here. The planning board adopted a resolution which granted site approval and a special use permit to Verizon for their facility on top of Providence Hall. Verizon filed a lawsuit in federal court against the city and the planning board, challenging elements of it, and also seeking to get back all of their escrow fees, which I believe were upwards of $48,000. We're authorizing the mayor to retain the independent counsel to represent the city defendants in the lawsuit and to agree with the stipulation and order that resolves the action without the need of further litigation. There's no admission as to the merits of the party's positions in the litigation, and the city will not ask for any more escrow fees, nor will we have to refund those escrow fees. So I need an introduction and a second. And for if Mary is Mary, I'm sorry, Margaret Morris is on. This is what the executive session.
I'd like to ask a question before we so this resolution doesn't reveal or name what the details of the agreement are.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the agreement, which is attached and being posted with it, because your resolution isn't changing any of the conditions of the planning board's approval. You don't have to include those in your resolution. It's being done. You're incorporating and agreeing to the settlement, which has the main elements, that is, it applies to the council that Tom talked about. And the other...
So the public can see it?
Yep.
It is. It's being posted.
Yep.
And I just want to make a correction, because Tom, you said we are authorizing and we are not. It's a resolution that is authorizing. We didn't vote on this yet.
Okay. Do I have an introduction?
Not I.
Hello?
Tom, I'll introduce.
Jane, thank you. Do I have a second?
Yeah, second, Tom.
Malachi, thank you. Okay. And all the documents, both the resolution and the documents, will become part of this meeting's documents and documents for next week. Okay. Now, let's go back to resolution number 5, Shaheem. And I guess we can talk about 5 and 11 concurrently, since they're related. Okay. This resolution declares the city's support for state legislation for good cause eviction law. Let's hear from our council people first, if they would like to. Rebecca, you're up first. You're not muted. I mean, sorry.
I got it. I just would like to suggest that, you know, what really should be happening with this law is that we should be making the changes that were proposed in the legal committee to amend the law and then reintroducing the law for a vote. That is what I believe should be happening with this law. And, you know, so I'm just going to leave it there.
Well, you want to go further, perhaps?
I do. I want a full explanation of what this resolution before us means, because we did pass the law, correct?
Yes.
So what's happening now?
Well, as you may recall, the law was vetoed by the mayor because Rebecca was hoping we could revise it somewhat. And then...
Excuse me, Rebecca. I'm asking Tom. We had plenty of time to conversate over this resolution before this meeting tonight. Now, I'm asking Tom for some clarification. So... being that the local law was vetoed by the mayor,
So before us is a resolution. Why not the local law to vote on that again with whatever changes that was made?
Because
I know the people are depending on a law, not a resolution.
I think you were at the legal committee meeting where this was what everyone decided to go, not everyone, what was decided to go forward with. You were there. We could have revised the law, and we still can.
And yes, I may have been there, Tom, but I'm going to state this to you for the record and everyone else. You don't know if I could have had a seizure that wipes out my memory. So if I'm asking questions just to, and I'm not chastising you,
okay.
I'm just letting you know.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I understand that.
Now,
that's understandable. I just.
Now, I think, you know, being that this is an informal meeting, we can hear from the people because we have over 50 people here tonight. And I know they wasn't here just for the committees.
Of course.
So
we will. I just counsel.
I'm suggesting, as you know, not tabling, but going back to the law and removing this resolution.
Okay.
And I second that.
Other council members like to speak first, and then we'll go to the public.
Yeah, Tom.
Yes.
I just like to say that respectfully, Tiffany, if you don't recall this, I certainly understand your situation. But others of us that are here tonight were also in that legal committee meeting, and it was we examined the pros and cons of this, discussed it at length. Jeff Baker came up with this solution or this suggestion, I don't know, this solution. And it was everybody at that meeting, at that legal committee meeting, had an opportunity to address this. And now we're kind of going, oh, wait a minute, that's not what we meant. And I,
you know, Shane, at the end of the day, this is a resolution and this is a informal meeting, and it should have never went back to the council in the first place. You know, this was an idea that came up that someone on the council decided at the last minute, oh no, we shouldn't have voted on this law. You know, this is something that the people wanted, and this is something that we're doing. I remember that Jeffrey Baker made a statement along the lines of, let's let other cities pass it first, and then let's see if they get sued, and then wait. I remember making a statement that no, we should not wait, and that's not what cities do. I remember those comments being made. I'm getting a whole bunch of messages from constituents and people now about having this law that I'm going to read it to you. It says we should only be discussing shoring up the legislation that was previously passed by the Common Council, voted for in favor of the good cause. I just know that certain members on the council was definitely against the good cause law, and that's why we had this passed, because it's what the people wanted. So I just don't understand why it's a resolution tonight. It should go back to the law. And if that was a motion that Rebecca made that I made and she seconded, then we should proceed with that, because according to the rules, if it's on the floor, if the motion and the second is made, we proceed with the vote.
Well, okay, Tiffany, I would just ask then, if that's the way we are to proceed, is it the version that was vetoed by Mayor Johnson, or is it another version? I mean, aren't we kind of back at the drawing board, so to speak? I mean, what version would, if we were going to enact the law, which version of the law would we be considering to pass?
So, Rebecca.
Just so we don't get confused right now, I think it's important to understand that there were amendments to the law that were proposed in legal committee and were under discussion, and that is the version of the law that should have come forward. And the reasons that it didn't come forward are not clear to me. It was making its way through the committee and it should have been introduced. And so the fact that it then got talked down in legal committee is also not, it's easy to talk people down when you start threatening that there might be a lawsuit, right? Which again is like, seems to be a really common way to get something to not happen.
Okay, so then, Rebecca, are you suggesting
that we got down because we voted to support it? You're the one that wanted the changes, and this is the reason why we're here today.
Let me explain to everybody and you why there needed to be changes to the law. It's because, there was an example that was brought up earlier tonight in which somebody mentioned, Robin Waters brought up how senior citizens are losing their homes because in the market, their rents can be raised because the market has gone up, right? The law, as it was originally presented, had a loophole in it that said that if the market supported it, then the law would not be in effect. Essentially, if the market supported the rent going up, and people or supported the sale of because basically people could make money off of it, then the law would not be in effect. That loophole had been removed by other places, including, I forget the list, but there's a little list of other places in New York that have passed the law with the version that we now should pass or should have before us. Okay, do you understand?
Excuse me, I don't never understand you, but excuse me, Jeffrey Baker, couldn't we, the council, call for a vote to amend the law?
No, not really. You've got to go through a process. I mean, I think some of the confusion where you discussed it several months ago is it was not clear to me what the suggested amendments were going to be. There were continuing questions about the fundamental legality of the law. Tom said that for the November legal committee meeting, which we had last week, we would not be putting forward anything with the amendments, but the talk about the basic posture of the law and the best way to proceed. The consensus of the legal committee meeting was to go forward with the two resolutions that you have tonight. One is expressing your support for the state legislation, which is very similar to what you've been considering. And the second is to ask for an informal opinion from the Attorney General's office as to whether the city has the fundamental authority to enact this law, so that you would not have to necessarily get into a case of spending a lot of money on a lawsuit, which would determine just you simply did not have the authority to issue the law. That's the current status of where you are. If you want to continue to amend the law, I would say send it back to your legal committee, work it out there, decide how you want to amend it. I would also suggest that you could easily go forward with both of these resolutions in the meantime. They are not mutually exclusive. One supports the statewide effort. The other one makes the request to the Attorney General's office that may give you guidance as to the wisdom of going forward and evaluate the risks for the city. So those are your choices.
Ryan,
if those are our choices, you know, just like what we did tonight with other resolutions, that we need to take this back to the legal committee so we can have this as an official law and not resolutions. I'd like to, I represent the city and my constituents and more, and I would like to see what the people want and not what people's arrogance is taking over because they want to have something to show on their way out.
Ryan, did you want to say something?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I see Rebecca Garrard is here tonight, and something she said during our first meeting has really stuck with me in this whole process, which was, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, which is why I still stand behind the bill in the first form that we passed it. Just for everybody on the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. In any way that we would pass even the current versions of the amendments back, I think what is in front of us tonight is a statement from the council saying, well, fine, well, we'll fight it out in legal committee on what this formally looks like. We can't be silent on the issue to begin with. So to be able to get any notices of support, flags raised, pots and pans banged, to the state level to let them understand that we're looking at it. But in the interim, please don't wait just for us to get this done. I'm a firm believer of the more noise you can make around it, the better. So whichever direction we decide to take this in tonight, I would urge people to, yes, get the AG's comment out there. It should be known that over the weekend, the AG came out in support of good cause as well, if nobody has seen the video yet. And so second to that, I think in whatever timeline it would turn around from the office, we would probably be hearing a positive message, not an attorney, but I'm just going to put that out there. And, you know, second to that is support it on the state level and on the local level if we can.
So what you're suggesting, Ryan, is to go ahead with these two resolutions and also bring the law back
in the legal committee, legal,
and get it done before the end of the year.
Correct.
Okay, so you want to, should we introduce these two and then have a further discussion since we have people?
I thought we had, okay.
There's a motion on the floor.
There's a motion on the floor. For
there's a motion on the floor.
There's a motion on the floor.
For what?
For this, for it to go to back to the legal committee.
Oh, okay. Yes, sorry. Is there a second?
Yes.
Yes. Mostly seconded already.
Okay, okay. If everybody, hey, excuse me. If everybody keeps talking at once, we can't actually proceed.
We were all just informing you the same information, Tom, that it was already a motion and second.
I know, but everybody's doing it at once. Okay, so all those in favor of taking the original law that we passed back to legal counsel, I mean legal committee, and entering it and preparing it for the December meeting, signify by saying aye.
When is the next legal committee meeting?
Let's see. It's like the first week of December, as I recall. Or maybe earlier. I don't know. Let me see.
It's December 1st, Wednesday,
yep.
December 1st.
December 1st. And it gives us plenty of time to get it on the agenda for December. So again, all those in favor of taking the law to the December 1st meeting, revising it accordingly, and getting it on the agenda for the end of December, for the December meetings, signify by saying aye.
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 It should be voted on next week. Can we, I'm sorry, I know, can we just have a special meeting? December is so long away. We're not even in the middle of the month. We're only in November 10th.
There's no, we should, but if you look at the schedule, you'll see there's a bunch of special meetings already scheduled this week. We could end for next week.
I would suggest doing that. This is something that the people are depending on now. And we will be
we won't be out of time, but there's no way we can get it done before next Tuesday's meeting.
Well, we think we can at least start the process next week and not wait till December 1st.
Sure, but it will make a difference because it still would then be voted on the same meeting in December.
Well, the difference would be this, Tom. I don't want anybody December 1st, you know, to come up with, oh, well, you know, this and that and this and that. Does the law have to be laid on our desk at a certain time, right?
Jeff?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we should have a special meeting this month.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have our meeting, it can be just prepared to be voted on.
Okay. Let me work out the schedule because there's, as I said, a lot of special meetings in our near future, and I'll definitely try to work something out so we can get it moving as fast as possible.
But it would definitely be too late in December. We definitely need it for next week.
Okay. In the meantime, do we want two things? Do we want to go ahead with these two resolutions?
I think we should definitely go with the second resolution because we definitely need an opinion. Because, again, you know, what's the sense of putting a resolution or a law forward if it's not going to work?
Well,
excuse me, I'm talking.
Sure.
Oh.
Okay. Well, we also have to think about the legalities because we hold the purse strings. Just like Beacon, everyone in Beacon wanted to do it, but legally they couldn't. So we, you know, it's our responsibility. We have to think about some things here. You know, is this, what's the sense of putting something through if it's not going to help? I get it. I want it to help. I get what you're saying, but I also want it to be legal and I want it to stand. And if by rushing all this through, that we're jeopardizing it even working. And I think that that really needs to be thought out, you know, in terms of if this has teeth. And I think it's definitely sending it to the Attorney General. And I really don't think the harm, if we're supporting this, to sending it to the state level. I don't see, because it's not changing our, it's enforcing what we wanted to do on the state level so we can be, so it can be legal. So
you know what, Dominic, you know, in a way I agree with you, you know, let's do this in a way that we would have some feedback from the Attorney General's office, letting putting our best foot forward, letting them know what we're doing. And that would be something if we were the example. If we were the example. This law has been passed in Albany, the capital. The capital, where our main legislation comes from, okay? It has been passed in Albany. And I trust in Albany as they trust in us. And this law is not something that we just came off in Hudson ourselves to. I would love for us to be that example for the rest of the capital region and New York State. But this law was already passed.
But I understand, Tiffany, but it was passed in a different format. We're changing the format. And by Rebecca adding the amendments just proves that this wasn't ready.
Well, that's just Rebecca's opinion, Dominic. Three major cities and passed it. And just so we're all clear, the Attorney General supports it. So you all can look that up. The Attorney General supports good cause eviction. And we can take away what Rebecca said and continue the law as it was written in Albany. But it is not something new. We are not the example.
I would rather the Attorney General say, I support it, and it's legal if you make it. But when I'm saying to support it, she's not saying it's legal.
Can I just clarify on the Attorney General, please?
You voted for this. You voted for it. Jeff, now I think the election is something else. So I just want everybody to understand that, yes, we all were in agreement. And then one person out the council decided, oh, well, we need to do this and do that. And this is why we are all here today.
And I take offense to that, Tiffany, because
you can't look it up. The attorney
Beacon came,
good cause eviction.
Beacon's opinion came in after. So by me doing due diligence, by looking for other legal opinions, it's not me, you know, changing something. It's me educating myself, saying, wait a minute. We need to step back because there's a Beacon has very good attorneys that they're saying, wait a minute, we need to look at it. That's all I'm saying. Just because this has nothing to do with it. And I take offense to that because I want to look at something in an educational way. And yes, we need to think about the legalities because the next council is going to be dealing with the legalities. And that's something we need to think about. Is this going to stand? And what are some of the other things we can do in the meanwhile to get our opinions known?
And just so clarification, we don't need a resolution to send a letter to the Attorney General. Any one of us can do that. Any one of us can do that.
Okay.
But we need action. We have been calling for this. And just like our last meeting when we actually voted on this law, this is like the same amount of people we had and more because the public wants this. And this is something, once again, you can look up on the internet and call her office yourself. Call the office yourself. The Attorney General supports the good cause law.
Okay, Jeff Baker wanted to speak. Unmute yourself, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm just going to point out, and I didn't see the Attorney General's statement, but I would imagine because she is running for governor, she was making a policy statement that she supported the legislation from a statewide perspective and was generally supportive of just cause eviction. I doubt she was making a statement, and if she was, I'll stand corrected, that it was legal for each municipality to do it on its own, absent statewide legislation. And you just got to be careful of whether she was speaking in her role as a policy proponent or as the Attorney General weighing in on the question of preemption. That's all I wanted to say.
Rebecca?
Oh, is Rebecca Garrard here?
Hold on. She is. We're going to get to them, but counsel always goes first. Rebecca Wolf.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, you know, relate how my actions went forward on this, which basically had to do with the fact that I remembered that we had talked in legal committee about the loophole, which would basically make the law essentially useless in Hudson. And so, you know, I did consult with people who are working on the, on this law. And essentially I was told that it would be great to amend it. And I was told that newer campaigns such as Kingston, Ulster, Newburgh, Beacon, Poughkeepsie, et cetera, do not have that loophole. I concluded that it was important that it not have that loophole. I feel like, you know, and so I just basically want to clarify that.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Rebecca. Now we'll hear from the public. We'll start in order. Judith Goldener?
Hello. My name is Judith Goldener. I'm the attorney in charge of the Legal Aid Society. I'm here to testify because I played a very large role in getting the HSTPA passed and working on almost every piece of significant housing legislation that happened at the state level. In addition, I was the lead lawyer on the leading preemption case in the Court of Appeals. And I'm here to tell the council here that you have the authority to pass the good cause law. You are not preempted. There are three types of preemption. There's express, there's field, and there's conflict. It is clear that there is no explicit preemption. So there is no, the state legislature has not said, you may not pass this law. It is, there is no field preemption because the state legislature has not occupied the entire field of real property and landlord-tenant. They just have not. And in terms of conflict preemption is a very narrow concept. And it usually happens when you cannot comply with both state law and whatever law the locality wants to pass. That is also not the case here. Why is that not the case? Because what good cause does is govern when a leasehold expires. And the state law governs what happens after a leasehold expires. So there is no conflict here. And this is especially true in an area of real property where localities have actually the most home rule. And I'm going to end with quoting a Court of Appeals case, Garcia, 31 NY 3rd. And it said, reading conflict preemption principles too broadly risks rendering the power of local governments illusory. The fact that both the state and local laws seek to regulate same subject matter does not give rise to an express conflict. So what I'm here to say is, based on my long experience of 33 years working on these areas, this locality clearly has the power to pass this good cause law, and I urge you to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Next, what was her name?
Judith Goldener, and I'm with the Legal Aid Society.
Thank you so much.
Next, Rebecca Garrard.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to Judith, my dear friend, who I asked to testify tonight. I always defer to her on legal opinions on housing law, as she is someone who helps draft and defend housing legislation at the local, state, and federal level. You know, anyone who knows me knows that I have a long and deep relationship with Hudson and the residents and the council members and the mayor. And it really saddens me to say that I'm disgusted to be here testifying in the manner that I am tonight. You know, to hear Jeff Baker say that he was confused and that there was confusion since this started is such a false representation of actually what this process has been. When this council passed the good cause legislation the first time, the only person who was confused was Jeff Baker. Every other single council member who was in attendance and voted yes had no confusion. And so the only person who had any hesitation.
Rebecca, can I interrupt you?
No. Actually, I'd like to finish and then feel free to comment.
But who had, it's a personal attack.
Okay, so let me say this.
Okay.
The only hesitation, the only hesitation was on your part. Because when I heard the vote called, it was a mandate. It was a mandate on the part of the council to deliver this legislation that is vitally needed on the part of residents of Hudson who are being gentrified, who are being unhoused, and who are being displaced, period. Mayor Johnson vetoed this in good faith, because the assurance was that this legislation was being edited to be stronger and that a new version would be put on his desk for him to sign. And yet here we are. I don't know how. I don't know why. Here we are somehow with revisiting this idea that this municipality doesn't have the authority. So I asked Judith to come because who do I trust to give legal advice about housing law? I'll tell you who I trust. Someone who has made a decades-long career of doing nothing, nothing but practicing housing legislation at every level of government over a corporation council for a municipality, period. And I urge every council member to do the same. This new version, which you've all just heard, is perfectly legal to pass, needs to be passed expeditiously, needs to be presented to the mayor, and he will sign it. Period. That's it. This resolution that is before us does nothing for the residents of Hudson. Absolutely, positively nothing. And I'll leave time for others.
And these resolutions mean nothing.
Okay. The person who's listed as Housing Coalition, could you identify yourself first?
I am Quentin Cross. How are you guys doing
tonight? Okay, thank you. You're up next.
I'm getting on to urge you guys to pass the good cause eviction law. They did it a few months ago. We can't wait. You know, the timeline that you have in place for December would mean that the bill basically dies, right? Because it has to be laid on the desk and then voted on a month prior. So it has to be next week that you lay it on your desk. But let's talk about the people you're talking about. What the legal fees would be like. People will be homeless. People have nowhere to go. People are already being squeezed. People want to be able to stay in Hudson where they were born and raised, where they live. Many of you, most of you ran on a housing platform. You said you would move forward affordable housing projects. The Common Council did not get that done. The IDA just had to do a project. Let's not forget. So we're asking you to do the right thing. Do what you said you would do. Uphold the values of the Democratic Party that you say you are a part of.
provide access for people who need it the most in this city and stop playing games. Thank you so much for giving me this time. The people need you right now. Stand up, defend them for a chance. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Claire Cousin.
Hi, I would just like to echo Rebecca and Quentin's sentiments. I'm very disappointed in the fact that the council is having this conversation again. I'm grateful that there were experts on the call to talk about all of the things that the council thought needed to be postponed to get the answers to. I think that all of the information you need has been shared in this call. I would love for the council to put their egos to the side and represent all of their constituents, not just the handful that have their phone numbers and can push their agendas and their immediate needs, and look at the greater picture. Albany is the capital of New York State. New York State is the leading state in the nation. If Albany passed it as is, and we're bringing that to you, and we have experts on the ground continuously doing the work, I think that there is plenty of information available for the council to decide to do the right thing and pass it. And all of the questions and postponing of getting this passed says exactly where you stand. And there is no more smoke and mirrors. The people are watching. They know what's happening. And if this doesn't go through tonight, you can expect to hear from more than your contacts of constituents about what their needs are and what needs to be done.
Thank you, Claire. Margaret Morris has asked to speak.
Yeah, thank you. I've attended all of the meetings relating to this law, and I just want to talk a little about process and confusion. The council passed a version of this law. I attended the meeting where it was passed. Then a subcommittee of the council, the legal committee, met and decided that they wanted to ask the mayor to veto the law. I was at the public hearing where the version that had been passed was presented, and then the mayor vetoed it because the council wanted to take it back, the legal committee wanted to take it back and revise it and make I don't know what revisions they wanted to make, because that was not made public. So if there's any confusion here, it is because the council passed a law that had been through legal committee, then the legal committee, which is a subcommittee of the council, had second thoughts and wanted to make revisions. And I want to make another point. People are talking about Albany. The city of Albany is not the same thing as the capital of New York State. The city of Albany is making decisions in whatever way they are making. That is not an indication of a decision being made in the capital of New York State. That's one point. The revisions that I think the legal committee and the council wants to make to this law remove language that is in the original Albany law that was initially adopted. So if there's any confusion here and any, you know, back and forth, it's the council and the subcommittee of the council, the legal committee, that have created this problem. You had passed a version of it. I don't understand why you brought it back and said, no, please veto it. The reason we're here tonight having this conversation again is that you asked us to be here again to discuss this law. So, you know, just...
Well, there's no confusion on our end. We're just appalled that this is so redundant.
Can I finish? So, you know, all I'm saying is go through the process, think it through, decide what you're passing, and then live with it. But you passed it, a subcommittee took it back, you want to revise it, and that's why we're here tonight.
If I may, Margaret, we passed this law because it is what the people wanted. And we, as you said, you attended that meeting, so you know it was either passed unanimously or a majority of the council passed this local law. And if we had one council member that was adamant about making this change without making any real changes. And that's why we are here today. And we are here today because of that, but we also want to ensure what was happening and what needs to be done because of how our people in the city of Hudson are suffering. And also,
Yes, it came out of Albany, and that is the capital. And yes, it may be the city where the resolution was made, but this is what cities and government do. You know, it could have been a resolution or a local law that was passed in downstate New York City. But if it makes sense for the people in the city of Hudson, and it's going to work, and it is being supported by the state, then yes, that's what cities do. We take laws, we change them, or we keep it the same, and we use them to enhance and help the people in our city, or we make up our own.
Tiffany, I understand what you're saying. All I'm saying is, in relation to process, the reason we're here tonight.
I know why we're here tonight. I answered you.
Council,
I told you.
The council passed a law.
Okay.
Then they clawed it back. Then the mayor vetoed it.
Yes,
I just want to be clear. It's not a they. And so, you just need two people, right? Motion and a second. We're all back at the same table. And being that we all are back here, and I agree with you, it should have been left the way it was and passed and left at that. We shouldn't be here again today. But being that we are, we want to make sure that it is passed and not move on and get dismissed because it's been sitting around for so long. It's unfortunate that we're here again tonight discussing it when the people had good faith when it was originally passed. Now the people are scared. And I'm trying to eliminate that fear by having this passed.
Kaya, did you want to say something?
Yes, thank you, Tom. And thank you to all the council members who are working on this legislation. I want to express my strong and vehement support for passing Good Cause as soon as possible and as robust a law as possible. If that means making a special meeting this week so that this can get on your desks in time, I think that this is the most important thing that can happen this year. And there are literally young people and people of all ages, their lives are on the line because of housing. When young people get displaced from the city, as has been happening at a rapid, unbelievable rate this year, the threats to their safety and mental health and communities and networks of care is so extreme. And those of us who work with them know what this is like firsthand. And I can tell you that this housing crisis is devastating. And we cannot wait for people to hem and haw over getting some more information when we have the information that we need. We have a legal expert on the call who's given us the information, given all the council members the information they need to confidently pass this law. We have the AG who's already expressed her support for this. The information is clear. The actions are also clear. We just need to pass the law. And if any of the council members continue to push this off because you want to gather more information or wait until next year, whatever that is, I think that that is awful and will be noticed by voters.
So I urge
you to pass it, and I thank you to the council members who are advocating for it.
Thank you, Kaya. Look, I'm looking over the calendar, and we can have an emergency meeting of the legal committee Thursday night at 6:30. If everybody who's here is happy with that.
I'll be there. I'll be there.
And so if we get the law revised at that meeting, we can enter it next Tuesday. Put it on the agenda for next Tuesday.
Thank you.
The 11th?
The 11th at 6:30.
That work.
Thank you.
Let's see. I'm just trying to see. Okay. So I'll get that information out right away. We still have some commentary in the meantime.
Rebecca, can I just...
Yes, I have you next, Rebecca.
Oh, thanks. So while we have the legal experts here, it would be helpful, I think, because if it's going to legal committee, that's generally not as much of the public comes. But I think it would be very helpful if the people who are experts on this law could explain what it is that was the loophole that needed to be removed, because I think that there, I just don't think that there's an understanding.
Judith had to get off. This is Rebecca. I'm so Rebecca Garrard. So sorry. Okay. Judith had to get off. I am happy to set up a meeting before Thursday with Judith and the law committee to have her work through that with you all.
Okay, well, like I would just was hoping that there could be some conversation about it here tonight so that all of the people who are here could understand what is the value of having, of like, what's the difference between the original law and the law that we hope to pass.
I mean, I'm happy to explain that, the benefit of it, though I feel like you could too, Rebecca, but I'm happy to do it. So the original law cited one of the good causes as a transition of ownership. And so the concern around that, which I will validate, the concern around that is that part of what fuels gentrification is that when developers come into municipalities, and we all know this is very, very true in Hudson, and buy up buildings, they either empty buildings to convert them to wealthier, often whiter housing, or if they don't empty them, empty buildings, they make improvements on them. And so what we want to do is ensure that when a building is bought, that tenants can't be evicted just because there's a transition of ownership. And so that was one of the loopholes that was eliminated, right? That a transition of ownership cannot be listed as a good cause. The way it passed in Albany was that if it was written into the sales contract, that it could be a good cause for eviction. And so this eliminated that loophole. The other one was that it said that a judge could take into account market rate factors when deciding if a landlord could go above the 5% rent increase. And so once again, right, when we've seen the rents in Hudson increase exponentially, which leads to the affordability crisis, the rapid displacement, the rapid gentrification, right? Even if your building isn't bought, your proximity to new development, to whiteness, means that your rent is increasing, even if the condition of your housing hasn't changed in any material manner. We don't want judicial discretion to say that the market would bear a rent increase that goes above the 5%. And we want, right, that rent increases that go above 5% to be solely tied to the cost of owning the property.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. That is Rebecca Garrard, also Rebecca Wolf. Okay, we have two more comments on this, and then we're going to move along, because we do have a special meeting now on Thursday where we will hammer out the version of the law that will be put on the agenda for next Tuesday. So, with that, Margaret Morris again.
Yes, thank you, Tom. This evening, I really only talked about process and how we got to where we are tonight and the confusion. I have a question. Will the legal committee that will be meeting later to revise this law be open to the public and open to public comment? My first question.
All meetings are open to the public and open to public comment.
Okay. Because there are many aspects of this law that I disagree with that I think will have unexpected consequences just because of the nature of long-term rentals in the city of Hudson. And I want to make sure that if we're going to go back and start walking through this again, I will be participating and commenting on why I think this is actually bad for tenants in Hudson.
Okay.
So I just wanted to make sure that was a public meeting.
All meetings are public.
Thank you.
Tom?
Yes, Dominic?
You do know the 11th is a federal holiday, right?
Yeah, but that's the only chance we have. I do. I'm sorry, but that's just, the week is just full of meetings and hearings.
It's the 11th day of the 11th month of the 11th hour.
Okay, Molly, okay. Molly Stinchfield, like to speak?
Thank you. I'm also speaking up in favor of good cause eviction, and I'd like to just say that waiting for people with means to potentially sue us will again put people without means at further disenfranchisement. We're talking about these potential lawsuits being abstract versus the tangible already occurring evictions that are going on in Hudson, pushing people that have been living here and have grown up here further and further away from their families, making Hudson less diverse every day. And every day that passes before this resolution is passed means that more people are evicted, and then it's going to be too late. Once you get evicted, your life is cut off at the knees, and we're coming up on winter during a pandemic. So I just want to put that context into people's minds that being evicted at this point and having to move in with other families, crowding or potentially being homeless, these are not good alternatives. So I urge the council to vote in favor of good cause. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we will move along. Shaheem, if you're still with us, first of all, the local law introductory K is on your desks. There's a public hearing coming up on Tuesday, November 16th at 5:30, and that's the law to amend the city zoning code to allow certain commercial uses. The proposed law L, which is down at the bottom, Shaheem. This is naming streets. Do I have an introduction and a second? Do I have an introduction? We've talked about this.
I have to do Malachi.
That's Malachi. Thank you, Malachi. And a second, please.
Second.
Oh. You can have it, Tiff.
Tiffany? Thank you.
I was trying to mute it. Oh, thank you.
I was wondering why we didn't hear you, since it's basically a law you have put forth. Yes. Okay. A couple of some announcements. Public hearing on Tuesday at November 16th at 5:30 p.m. To discuss that proposed local law K. Other meetings of note that you should, we have a special council meeting on Wednesday where the mayor will present the proposed city budget. On Friday at 5 o'clock, we have the mayor's public hearing on the budget. And then Monday, November 22nd, is our special meeting to vote on the budget. So you see there's a lot of special meetings, and we now have a legal committee meeting on Thursday at 6:30. I'm sorry. My apologies to all veterans that we are, you know, having this meeting on a day that we celebrate your service, but it's really the only thing possible this week. A very important announcement. As you know, Governor Hochul has signed legislation requiring any proposed resolution, law, rule, regulation, policy, or amendment be made available upon request and also to be posted on the body's website at least 24 hours in advance of any discussion at an open meeting. This law becomes effective November 18th. So I don't know if any of our department heads are here anymore, but take note. You will have to get your resolutions in earlier now, and they will be posted as they are already on the council page, but they'll have to be there 24 hours in advance. And of course, all committee meetings that have documents involved will also be subject to this rule. And that's pretty much it, although we have some comments. I think Tiffany would like to speak again. Tiffany?
I'll wait after the comments. I just have a comment for new business.
Okay.
I did want to touch base on the parking spaces resolution.
Yes, Malachi.
What was that?
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought somebody said something. Okay. Just hearing that they were talking about the funding in Hudson is not there for the parking lines. I think everybody that is a driver in Hudson can contest to just the horrific parking, the horrific, just the vehicles on the streets just not being just lined up right. So visibly, I think if we were to, maybe we can reword this and not touch, every street right now, but if we can start the process of start putting those lines in place on some of the streets, I think it'll just be beneficial. I heard people laughing about, the parking lines, but again, if you a parker in Hudson, you understand just how tough it is to park, especially in the winter time when, you're trying to find parking spaces and everybody is the spaces are so wide that, you can't find efficient parking. So I think that the parking lines would, really be able to, just make some adjustments to the way we're parking and it hold people accountable to the way they're parking. And again, like I said, maybe we can reword this resolution, but I think it is important for the city of Hudson, for drivers in Hudson to be able, again, like I was talking about before, right outside my house, I had to break up two fights last year and, it becomes a safety issue. So that's all I wanted to say. Just want, people to consider it and sound like it wasn't even put out there, but, I do want to, revisit it.
Okay. Well, I promise you we will revisit it. I think we might have to figure out an ad hoc committee to really dig deeper into it and the possibility of and how we could possibly do it.
Right. Okay.
Thank you, Malachi. I'm sorry.
No problem. No, that's okay. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Tiffany, did you want to say something?
I have an extra comment. So I just want to thank Malachi for saying something, at 9:21 when this was brought up at the department's being announced. And just to be clear, that's why we tabled it, so we can discuss it further to make these necessary changes. And just to also be clear, as what Rob Perry stated in the committee when he reported from the departments, how when you see how the lines take up more space than without the lines. And we already have a problem throughout the entire city complaining that there's no space to park. But that's the whole reason why it's tabled, so we can discuss it. I just wanted to address that. But number two, I wanted to make an announcement to the public that Black Entrepreneur Market, Columbia Economic Development Council, and E4ALL, we are having an event called Calling on All of Entrepreneurs of All Backgrounds, Ages, Life Experiences, Business Sizes, Identities, a workshop to prepare you for your business to sell your products, and just in time for the holidays and more. We'll be answering specific questions like how do I increase sales, visibility, compelling content. We're even offering headshot photography and of your face or your products. And this is all free to the public for entrepreneurs. And this takes place November 15th from 6 to 8 at the Hudson Hall. To-go food will be provided, and we require everyone to wear a mask because we will have everyone social distancing at the event. So I encourage all who wants to start a business or who has a business to join. And if you can't, sign up with us, and we'll be able to assist you if we're able.
Thank you, Tiffany. Anybody on the council or the public? Well, I see Maya.
Yes, I just want to thank everybody for at least being willing to talk further about the street parking. As someone who lives on the 400 block of State Street over the past many years, often there are 3 to 4 spaces that don't exist because of there not being a beginning point for somebody to know how to park. So I want to thank Malachi for bringing this up. And
thank you.
Us figuring out as a community how to deal with parking issues. Have a good night.
Thank you, Maya.
Thank you, Maya. Good night.
Anyone else?
Yes. We don't want any parking meters in these areas.
No, nobody. It wasn't parking meters. It's parking lines.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's suggesting
that. I remember Rob Perry saying something along the lines, with parking lines come parking meters.
Listen, you don't have to, you know, get all irate. I'm just, what I'm saying is, just like Maya was just talking about, there's spaces in the, you know, because there is no line. So there's no accountability. So people can't see, and they don't do it on purpose, but the spaces make it, you know, hard to park because the gaps are huge. So I think the lines would, you know, benefit, but at the same time, we can figure this out later. I know it's late. Everybody want to, you know, go to sleep and eat, but.
Thank you, Malachi.
Yes, sir.
And lines could bring meters, and I'm trying to save my constituents money as they're trying to save money.
No, no one's talking about meters. Don't worry about it. I don't think that'll ever happen. Anybody else?
That was it.
In that case, do I have a motion to adjourn?
I do have something else. Thank you for bringing that up. Ryan Wallace, I want to thank you for working with me on this project for the can deposits. I have been waiting to hear back from corporate, from ShopRite. And I also spoke to the mayor about the project that we're working on, and he thinks that it is a fabulous idea. And I was discussing one possible location is behind the Chambers of Commerce. And I said, you know, I will discuss with you where you think the next, because I think it should be at least 2 places in the city.
2, absolutely. We got to keep them within. I think of like the old folks that go out in the day and get the cans right. I mean, it's got to be walkable to like 2 places. So I'm with you on that.
Yes. And Michael Hara is going to work with us as well.
Awesome.
Okay. We had an introduction from, who was it?
Shersha.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ryan. All those in favor of adjourning, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Nobody opposed.
Well, thank you.
That time.
Well, thank you all. And hope to see you Thursday, Legal Committee. Bye.